Hey, what's going on, everyone? How y'all doing tonight? My name is Matt Jarbo. Welcome back to Boulder Talk Radio, the one late night show on YouTube that is made from a meme that destroyed a man's life. But we're back tonight to talk about all sorts of craziness, and I'm joined by my friend Vito Gasoldi. How you doing, Vito?
I'm doing okay. We'll see. You got some topics that are controversial that I might have to sit on the fence about. We'll see.
You might have to disavow.
Look, I'm a professional fence sitter.
I've been accused of that for years, so I get it, man. I've been accused of that for years. Everyone's all like, mundane matches sits on a fence.
And I'm all like, there's some topics, I'm sure, for you as well that you're passionate about. Yeah. There's some topics where you're like, I don't want to go down that road, but we'll see where this conversation takes us.
Well, there are a lot of topics like that. The way I view a lot of things is in the moment of going, like, how is this overblown controversy, or is it something that is worthy of the attention? And as I've learned, 9 out of 10 times, it's not worth the attention. But yeah, in the space where we have to kind of turn those things into things that could be attention worthy, unfortunately, it's part of the game. I'm not a big fan of it. I don't always engage, but sometimes I do. So I can't really, you know, sit there and cast stones because I'm in my own glass house.
Right.
But, yeah. And I think we all are in that regard.
Throwing boulders, you mean?
Well, I load my trebuchet. Sure. I don my Corey King crown and I sit upon a shiny metal trebuchet.
Yeah, I will say, I think leaning into it, you're making the right decision there.
Yeah,
Obviously, you don't like what happened and you wish you had done things differently, but hey, you're owning it. And that's what's important. You know?
Yeah, you have to own it these days, because if you don't, I think you really find a way to fuck yourself. And I was owning it early on, right? And I was owning it. Like, I even went on to like Teespring. You know the Supreme logo that they had?
Yeah.
I took that and I went and like looked how to make it. And I just put boulders. So if you go to teespring.com/boulders, you can legitimately buy a t-shirt. Like, no one bought it, thankfully. I would actually feel really bad if someone spent money on that shit. But like, even the other day, you can say
you fucked up, and time heals all wounds. You hope. It's been a while. So what's it been, more than a year at this point?
It's been 2 years. It's been a little over two years. Yeah.
Well, you've
probably
been counting the days more than me.
actually, to be honest with you, on the second anniversary, I completely forgot. Don't let it define your life. I had a lot of shit to do that day. And then like, I just kind of, you know, like spent the day doing what I need to do, spending with my kids. And then I think it was like the next afternoon, I went like, Oh yeah. I was going to make fun of that last night. People wanted me to go on. And then there was the sex tape incident, which we'll kind of cover here in a minute. Cause it's kind of tying into what I think is funny. But you have that, and then everyone's like, oh, that happened on the 2 year anniversary. So like, no one has their dates right. And I'm just sitting back going like, well, who am I to kill a celebration really in this moment, you know, like in all this shit. But yeah, it's been a wild 2 years. A lot's happened that a lot of people don't know about. There's a lot that I don't talk about. And the way I look at it now is like, I don't care. I'm not looking to get back in any click. I'm not looking to get back in any like anyone's good graces. I legitimately don't give a shit. And I just do this for me, and like, it's for fun, and it's like having conversations and everything else. And like tonight, even for example, like I was all, you know, trying to get on call into to Andy Worski's show. I was trying to get on there because they were trying to get a hold of me a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah, they were calling me.
They got my cell phone number, and they were calling me and pretending to be fake journalists. This is literally,
that's an odd move.
It's an odd move. Yeah. This is 2 days after, Ethan Ralph got my number and called me one night, absolutely pissed drunk and wanted to like prank me or whatever. And then after 3 minutes and 18 seconds, I made him so mad, he hung up the phone. Then he still played
Did he play that clip? Okay.
He played the clip. Like, and he's all like, I won. And no, because he hung up on me. You know, there's a difference there. I was driving home and I'm like, you know what, man, fuck it. Like, I would have pulled the hell over. You know what I mean? I would have pulled over and just gone in for like 2 hours on the subject with him if he wanted to. Yeah, I would have done it. I was in that mood. And then he hung up and I was all like, oh, come on, dude, call back. Come on, man, call back. Please call back. and you never called back. And I felt like I'm kind of being robbed of a fun experience here.
Fun there.
I didn't have any fun. Like, you're going to call me and like prank me. At least let me like engage in it a little bit, you know?
The whole nature of this internet blood sports community, it's an interesting thing because there is a temptation to want to participate in it. It's spectacle. It's public theater.
Yeah.
But occasionally it goes too far. Actually, it probably goes too far a lot of the times, and people forget that the little icon, your little circle icon at Twitter, is not a real person, or it's not actually you, you know, that we have multiple personas. But as you're beating up on this idealized cartoon version of someone, you know, there's a real person behind that account that's not having a really good day. So I would like to see, I mean, I try to stay out of I just would like to see people acknowledge the circus, acknowledge that it is a more of a performance for the audience, that it is true hatred and vitriol. And some of these guys, I think they don't see the performative aspect of it. I mean, they actually want to fight. So it's complicated for sure.
There's a lot of that's out there like that. A lot of people do want to fight. A lot of people, I think it's like, you know, I can understand the allure of the spectacle. You know, I like to joke about like how everyone's kind of on edge right now because we don't have sports. And a lot of dudes who watch sports, they get off like they get off on watching large, overgrown, overpaid, sweaty men grapple each other and throw each other around. Very, you know, very Roman-esque, if you will. And they like watching this, like watching, you know, wrestling and football. But they got to have that crowd experience because look at the gladiatorial, you know, the arena from ancient, you know, ancient Rome. Like what if it was just like two dudes fighting each other and like one asshole in the stands going, like it just wouldn't have the same effect. But you've got all these people literally killing each other to thousands and thousands and thousands of onlookers that are wanting people to live and die legitimately. So that added to the excitement. Like, oh, am I going to see Maximus die today? Or is he going to reign supreme? What's, you know, all this shit. So there's, I mean, like we carry that with us in regards to voyeurism and living vicariously through other people. Now it's like, you know, football and baseball and basketball, but without a crowd, it delineates everything, in my opinion. It just makes it boring. And it's like, that shit's kind of boring like without a crowd. And I don't even like sports.
That's an interesting take. I mean, there is something in the man animal that obviously primes us for conflict. It's an evolutionary thing. You got to beat the other guy over the head with the bone so you can take his woman and create the next generation of bone slammers. Which is, it's a tough thing to keep in check. I'm thinking about wrestling, though, and I go, you know what? That's perfect because people understand it's theater. You know, and that you can celebrate the aggression that lives inside yourself and you probably can't deny without actually hurting anybody. I mean, I'm a hardcore pacifist. I think there are obviously times where aggression is necessary, especially in the case of self-defense. But, you know, I look at things like the death penalty and I go, you got the guy behind bars. He's never getting out. He no longer poses any threat to anyone. I don't think the state should be in the business of killing people just to satisfy this weird sense of revenge. Maybe I'm getting off topic here.
I get it.
Yeah. And it's this constant struggle of you have a lot of people who are out for blood. They think that, yes, when a bad person dies, their day is made better. Or when a bad person is hurt, or, you know, beat up, has their teeth knocked out, they go, well, that's the kind of justice I enjoy. And it's tough to fight against that mentality and try to convince people, this aggression we have, why don't we find a fun way to channel it instead of trying to ruin people's lives or outright kill them, you know?
No, I completely agree with you. I'm having fun poking at certain people because they spent 2 years coming after me. And that's where I'm getting my little bit of payback on that front. And it's funny. Right. And it's funny to me because I should have done
this. You don't want to harm these
no,
people.
No, no. I don't want to harm anybody. I have right. I have no desire to harm anybody physically, whatever. You know what it is.
Maybe a little bit mentally.
Maybe a little, yeah. It's not, well, I'm really good at like kind of going for the like emotional jugular at times. Yeah. And like some people have been like I had a guy last night get really mad at me for like when Ralph called me and like he tried calling into question the biological parentage of my two daughters. And I'm like, well, hey, my dad's not dead. You know, and like I got chewed out for that. Like, well, that was mean. I'm like, fuck off. You know,
like Ralph has never been mean to you either.
Like Ralph has never been mean to people. You know, like it's he got into it with one guy and he was losing the debate, so he just started dropping the N-word, and then threatening to dox the guy's girlfriend. You know, like this is a few months ago. And it's like, that's the mentality of these people. And you have nothing left. These people go oftentimes unchallenged in any conceivable fashion. And the reason why is because much like the people they hate, they create their own hug box. They create their own echo chamber. You know, when we had the anti-SJWs of Gamergate, that was an echo chamber, very much a hug box. And any kind of delineation of that narrative ended up absolutely just like getting you ostracized as much as it did if you were an SJW going against the narrative. So we get, you know, the culture war goes both ways. It does all that shit. And so in these situations, a lot of these people built up these reputations or these narratives. And ultimately, you know, it kind of like the Reaper comes for everyone, so to speak. And it's all about how you handle it. And in the situation involving, let's say, internet blood sports, it's like everyone who was involved in that, for the most part, is not anywhere better off than they were 2 years ago. In fact, they were at the peak of their career 2 years ago, financially and popularity speaking.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, you've either been run off of YouTube to like the last vestibule of streaming services that uses blockchain that's now been bought by a larger competitor that might shut you down because
banning everybody anyway.
You know, they're gonna ban people that aren't, you know, within the quality that they want. And then you've got other people now that are tired of the bullshit, so they're striking back and they're using subversive tactics, and they're seeing that right now in 2020 they're finding success in deplatforming people. And I don't agree with that, but some people are doing that. And so it's kind of like it's going to be this massive bullshit, this massive thing. And it's like, look, man, if you don't want to see yourself getting in the situations, like this is a time when you have to reevaluate how you're doing things, what you're saying, where you're saying it, and like just keep your fucking head down. Like, really, that's what it boils down to.
I mean, to stay alive these days, you have to keep your head down. There's so many pitfalls that, I mean, it's a very troubling time for someone who wants to be any creator right now. And it terrifies me, some of what's going on, where jokes that were acceptable maybe 2 years ago are now off limits. Society is becoming, I hate to use that term, but a hug box of sorts. And
it is. It absolutely is. So, you have a lot of that situation happening. These people, you know, it's and I don't agree with it. I really don't agree with it. I think, like, you know, jokes that were, you know, look at James Gunn's situation from 2 years ago.
Right.
The jokes were terrible, but go back and like look at the jokes that were happening on Twitter in 2011 or 2010, roughly to 2013, 2014. You know, you had
I'm okay with James Gunn dressing up like a priest. I get the joke.
That was funny in my opinion. Yeah, because it's like he was like, these are themed parties. And people were trying to like espouse this narrative, and they're
if
trying
someone
to,
wants
like,
to dress like Hitler for a costume party. You're making fun of Hitler. You're not endorsing Hitler. Like, the joke is to turn these icons of hate or, you know, horrible abuse, and to say, you know, look at how awful this is. You're lampooning these things, these horrible things, and you're. I don't know. You're not trying to normalize it. You're trying to, I don't know the best way to put it.
No. Well, you're trying to, you know, it's satire. It's mockery. You know, lampooning
it
a lot of people don't.
It adds some levity to life because a lot of these things are tragic. I mean, you hear about child abuse and you're like, my God. And part of the way that people do deal with that is a bit of dark humor. And, yeah. And you can say that it goes out of bounds. And I think sometimes it does go out of bounds. But I would never accuse James Gunn of actually wanting to participate in that behavior. I think that's a wild extrapolation.
Well, the thing is, though, a lot of people found ways to try to profit off of those accusations. And they found ways to try to continue that by taking old jokes and attempting to ruin a dude's life. Although, you know, he was able to persevere, and now he's in this absolutely much better place if you think about it, because he's got the Suicide Squad coming, and then he's going right back into Guardians 3, and then the rumors I'm hearing is that he's leaving Marvel afterward, and he's heading back over to DC to take over some stuff over there.
Yeah, like, good for him. He's a fantastic movie creator. Yeah. I mean, even when he got fired, DC immediately went, let's snap this guy up, for the love of God. Disney's made the greatest mistake of their life.
And they, so, what was funny about that, too, is I think looking at the timelines, the while he was working the deal with DC to do the Suicide Squad, he was also talking with Bob Iger at Disney and reworking his deal to come back. So he was literally working both companies at the same time. And I don't know if Warner Brothers had knowledge. I'm sure they did. I'm absolutely sure they did. They're like, look, just come do this one movie. All right. Like, we really want, we tried bringing in Joss Whedon to do Justice League. We wanted to copy the MCU there. That fucking failed. So let's bring in James Gunn to do the Suicide Squad treatment and give us Guardians kind of for Suicide Squad. And then that will, you know, that will do great again and shit. And that's what they tried to do. And I'm all here for it, to be honest with you. I can't wait for the footage we get to see on Saturday. I think it's going to be awesome.
Oh, I mean, I'm obviously on record, and you know this, that I think Zack Snyder's DC trilogy was a big mess that confuses and confounds me at many turns. But I love seeing things get made by people who have a vision, even if it is a controversial vision. I believe Zack Snyder does have a vision for his DC universe. So I'm going to go into that, what do you call it? Justice League. Sorry, it escaped me. Yeah. I mean, I would love to be surprised. I would love to go, my God,
there's
a good movie buried at the bottom of this shit sandwich. Because you see the current Justice League, and there's nothing there really to celebrate, right?
I've seen it one time. I saw it opening night, the preview night, and I remember distinctly watching the opening credit sequence and going, my God, this is peak Zack Snyder, because it was totally Watchmen. You know, it was the same style.
I love Watchmen. 300. I think Zack Snyder has a stunning visual style. Perhaps one of the best visual filmmakers. Yeah. And a part of why I was upset with Justice League is they did some weird color grading.
Yep.
The costumes were clearly like, listen, this looks dopey in full light, but once you color grade it and bring the shadows in, it's going to look badass. But they left them in this full lighting, and I'm like, oh my God, everybody looks like a doofus right now.
And that was, and then you also had Ben Affleck had been binge drinking, and he was puffy, you know, he was fluffy. He was Fat Fleck at the time, and that didn't work out very well. And you could tell, like, you know, it was like, I was talking with a guy about this last night, and, you know, he was like, the movie's going to be shit. And because he thought that it was this is what a lot of people think, is that what we're going to get with Zack Snyder's Justice League is just extra footage on top of what we saw in 2017. And it's really like 80% of the the cinematographer of Justice League had said that, you know, it was only roughly 10% of what Zack actually shot is what we saw in the theatrical cut, because Joss Whedon had written and shot like 80 pages. They basically shot a whole new fucking movie super quick. And so they rushed through all, that's why it was really dialogue heavy. That's why it was really, it was really all those scenes, right? All the interpersonal scenes. It was very Whedon, Firefly, Buffy type shit.
Yeah, and I've never been a big Whedon fan. He seems like a very one note. I get it, Whedon. You want superheroes to swoop in with the cape flying behind them and be the big stereotypical hero. But he does it too obviously, where he goes, we got to have a Russian family for the Flash to save. I'm like, you don't need
to have that. And I don't think they'll be there in this, for like, it's the whole thing's going to be different. And it's like not a movie. It's going to be like a mini series.
Yeah.
So it's like, so it's, again, we're going into this now.
It's going to be like six episodes.
Like six episodes, like 4 to 6 episodes. Like even right now, what we know is that the length of, so when Zach did his original cut that he presented to Warner Brothers in 2017 after shooting was a 214 minute cut. And so that's a long fucking movie. And then that was with compromises. That was with cutting things out that he had shot. This time, there are no compromises. This is like Watchmen Ultimate Edition on crack cocaine.
And I don't understand the this Hollywood thing where a movie can't be 3 hours. I'm like,
Endgame did it.
I don't know. I'm willing to go to the theater and sit down and have myself a real. I don't know. Maybe the average moviegoer can't handle it, but for me, I'm like, yeah, I'll sit down for 3 hours.
Well, I mean, yeah, you live in the area, and so you kind of have that experience. I used to live down there, and you know, love doing that sort of thing. I think oftentimes it's the international marketplace, I think it's that kind of shit, which is why I think now what we're going to see is going to be a lot of these movies that are going to have kind of like the theatrical cut, and then we're going to see like more of the extended or director's cuts on streaming or on home video. Because remember, if you recall. Like, you know, they were doing a lot of that in the early to mid 2000s. We would get a lot of these theatrical versions, and then we would get the director's cut.
The extended
cuts. And that was a way, I think, for them at the time to sell DVDs. And they were really pushing those, like, two-disc special editions with the extra footage and shit.
Director's cuts were a big thing.
Yeah, all that stuff. Because people were buying DVDs left and right. I mean, like, I would allot part of my paycheck, like, every paycheck. To go and buy.
I never was able to amass a DVD collection. I have my game collection takes up all the space in my life.
Yeah, I know you have a pretty massive game collection. I've seen your pictures on Twitter, and I'm like, fuck, dude.
I've been collecting since I was like 15. Yeah. It's the one everybody goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, you know what? I never got into drugs. I never got into sports betting or whatever it is. If I had a little extra money, I'd go buy a copy of Chrono Trigger. Yeah, it's just my thing.
Sure. I'm trying to get into 4K. I want to get into 4K discs for some reason. I'm really drawn to them because now we're seeing, like, with no new movies coming to theaters, really, everything being pushed back. I'm like, Warner Brothers is dropping all of these 4K editions. Like, they've got this new edition of Goonies that's coming out on 4K, and it's got like a collector's box set that has like a treasure chest, and inside there's a map and a whole bunch of other little goodies. And then
when you see the movie in the theater and it's on film, technically the resolution is astronomical. So you can pull any image quality you want out of there.
Well, yeah. And I would still love to go see the 35 millimeter version of that. Like, because you're out in Pasadena, right? Like, that's where you're the area.
That general area.
Okay. So, you know, do you know the Regency Academy 6 on Colorado? So that's where I managed.
Really?
Yeah, I was an assistant manager there from 2010 to July 2010 to August 2011, and that's where I worked. So if you ever went during that time period, you probably would have seen me looking terrible in a tie. But when I was there, like, you know, we would do these cult movie screenings on Saturday night, and we would do these screenings, you know, like a Jurassic Park or Pulp Fiction or whatever. And my job was Friday night to watch the print. To watch the cut to make sure that there's no issues. So I had to preview it. And I was the only one there. I'd close the theater down, and then I would stay for another two and a half hours to watch the movie, which I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, dude. I'm going to be paid to sit here and watch these movies. Nothing wrong with that at all. The coolest one in my mind, and I saw a lot of great films, but the coolest one for me was an original 1985 print of Back to the Future.
Wow.
And I was like, it was fucking, I was ecstatic. I got to like, I just went in the back and I looked at it. I'm like, oh, so cool. If you're a theater file, like a movie file, like you see 35 millimeter print and you're like, oh yeah, you know, but like,
now, do those prints deteriorate?
Yeah, they do over time. They do over time.
But they can make new masters from them.
They can. In many cases, they don't because of the cost and whatever. But it's like, because the average print cost is about $2,000. But one of the reasons why the prints deteriorate has a lot to do with the oils from people's fingers, and so like you're supposed to like wear like white gloves when you handle these things,
And but no one does.
No one ever does. I did it one time. We were doing a film festival at that theater, and I had to break down like the only copy of this one movie from Japan. It was the I don't know what it was called, but it was the only copy in the world. And it was like, they were like, you need to
only
take this.
Copy. Jesus,
they printed out one copy of this movie to take to this film festival. And they're like, you need to break it down and only you can touch it. And you have to wear gloves and you have to go real slow.
What a nightmare. I would have been like, you do it. I'm
yeah, it was. It took me my entire shift. It literally took me my entire shift of about 7 hours to do this. I can break down. I used to be able to break down a 5-reel movie in less than 30 minutes because I know how to fucking crank that shit up. Right. I was really good at it. This one, I'm like, they were like, you got to go slow. And I'm like, all right. So I just sat there for like 7 hours and like did this.
Was it a 7-hour film? How long was the film? Because
the film was the standard length, 90 minutes or whatever. The reason why is it was 5 reels.
Right, but getting it on the spool.
You got to get it on there, but you can get it on there pretty fast. If you're going almost full speed, you can get one reel done in about 5 minutes from like start to finish. This one, it was like they wanted me to go slow so there was no chance of it coming off of the spool. Off of the platter, and then like, because sometimes that would happen if you're going too fast, the centerpiece comes loose and like the film print itself would fly off the platter, which I've done that accidentally before. And so then you're like, oh fuck. So you got to get that shit done.
It's always great when you break a piece of equipment at work.
Yeah. I've broken a lot of shit there at theaters over the years.
I used to work in a deli, and somehow I managed to dump an entire deli, like a $1,000 deli slicer onto the ground. And I'm like, well, hopefully it still works. I think it still works. I think I was okay.
You just pick it up, put it back. It wasn't me. It was Bobby.
That'll slice some cold cuts. We're going to be fine.
So I do want to get on to this, to this kind of spicy topic that, that we were somewhat discussing prior. I was keeping you in the dark about this one, just given the situation. So I'm trying to think of where to begin. Let me just ask you this. Are you aware of Ethan Ralph's sex tape?
Yes, I am aware of it.
Have you
seen
it?
I will not be watching it.
Thank God. I was there live when that thing went out there, and then my own curiosity got the best of me, and I'm all like, is this real? And then it's real, and
Ralph's a big guy. I'm a big guy, and I'm like, you know what? I could probably just watch myself having sex and probably get the same visceral reaction.
Except
look at my belly bouncing around. I don't want to see it.
That was the most. But the thing is, that was the most movement of this entire experience. Was like, it looked like a waterbed that was on like an infinity pool. You know, it just constant sloshing back and forth, and you can't tell, is it the fat or is it the booze? And it was a bad experience, to say the least. And then, of course, you had all your internet detectives that were trying to, look at everything in the background and like determine, is this Ralph? It was, because he had like the pixel.
I think that became clear pretty quickly.
It became clear when you heard him talk and you see his little pudgy sausage fingers and everything else. And it's like, but never mind that. He actually has printed out pixel art from his show. Like that was on his wall. Right.
On the wall.
And I'm just like, is that what I think it is? And I'm like, oh no, it is him. Ew, click, click, click. But anyway, so this situation has spawned a particular problem for him. And I think you would agree with me on this front here. One of the things you never really want to do is
release your own sex tape.
Well, actually,
some celebrities do want to do that.
I honestly think Kim Kardashian was on that. That was public. She was definitely like, she's almost a billionaire now. So it's like, she's like, I took a shot to the mouth and now I have $1 billion. My husband's Kanye. My life is great.
And my dad got OJ up. So I'm Hollywood royalty, baby.
Basically. Yeah. At this point they can do. I give her, to be fair to Kim Kardashian, I give her credit for going back to get her law degree to help with prison reform. I actually really support that. Like I do.
To be fair, her dad didn't get OJ off. He just hid evidence for OJ, if I remember it correctly.
You know, that's what a defense attorney does.
I think he represented him at first and then passed it. Did you watch all those OJ documentaries? Not to get super off topic.
No, I haven't watched a lot of the OJ.
There were two that came out, and they're both. One of them is a documentary, and one of them is an actual recreation with Cuba Gooding Jr. as OJ. I recommend watching both. They're fantastic.
Okay. Cuba Gooding just got accused of sexual assault.
He did.
That's not the first time, I don't think. He's kind of fallen off the wagon.
Yeah, recently. I mean, it wasn't a great pick for OJ. I'm like, this guy, Cuba Gooding does not look like OJ, but
wasn't John Travolta? Who was John Travolta?
John Travolta, I believe, played his lawyer, one of the defense.
Yeah, well, I know the name. It's, you know, they're all fucking.
Well, Dershowitz was the big one, but I don't think he played Dershowitz.
No,
Dershowitz is a famous lawyer. Who,
yeah, it doesn't.
And I think
really
he went to Epstein's Island as well.
He
so.
Did. No, he's out there now. Like he's out there now. Like he's getting called back in on this shit. Yeah. And he's trying to defend himself. And it's like, you know what, man? Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
I don't care what happens to Alan Dershowitz. I'm not,
I don't. Yeah, I care what happens to Ghislaine Maxwell, though. I do. I care because, like, yeah. I want to know what she knows, and I think. That's the reason why she's still alive. She's got like the tapes. Because if you recall,
what's crazy to me though is, and I did not know this, is that there were news articles about her getting girls for Epstein in like 2011, maybe even earlier. And I'm like, how did people know about this 9 years ago and weren't following this case and reporting on the ridiculous deal he got? I mean, obviously the man had connections to bury some stuff, but
Well, he had the help. You know, he had the help from that one district attorney who basically gave him a sweetheart deal. And I think from that, it kind of like trickled down. That's like an umbrella effect. You know, like it's like he's protected, but then it's everyone who worked underneath him is also protected because then that can't be used against him. And that's probably – and Ghislaine, I mean, looking at the photos of Ghislaine, like there's that photo of her and Kevin Spacey and they're like on the throne in, you know, Buckingham Palace.
And Lord. Yeah, what's the prince who was hanging out with Epstein?
Prince Andrew.
I don't know where he is. Is he the son of the current queen or is he like an offshoot? So he is directly related to the queen.
Yeah, okay. And that's why they're protecting him. Like. He's stepping back. He stepped back from public, like any kind of princely duties. He stepped back from, and he's, as far as I know, he's like basically kind of under lock and key. He's not doing anything public. Like they're not letting him talk to anybody. And, you know, there's been talk. I've heard there's been talk about seeking like an extradition order to try to get him forcibly get him to come to the States to talk about Epstein, which is never going to fucking happen.
Yeah,
you know, they're never going to. They're never going to get him. Like he would, you know.
I always say this about Epstein, a fantastic businessman, because he said, if I make an island where you can have sex with children, the president will want to be friends with me. No one else figured that out.
Did he actually say that?
No, but that was. I just picture him sitting around and he's like, how do I get in with all these people? I want to, you know, I want to hobnob with the president and the prince of. Why don't I establish an island where they can have sex with children? And it worked.
It worked for a while. Yeah.
Out his way in.
It worked for a while, which is really fucking terrible that it got that far, you know? And I'm pretty sure as far as the tinfoil goes, I don't really subscribe to a lot of conspiracy theories. I don't think that Epstein is dead. I think Epstein.
Really?
Yes. And I'll tell you why I don't think he's dead. The circumstances. And I know everyone's talking about the circumstances of like how he quote unquote died, right? Like they're talking about like, oh, like the guards were, you know, didn't check in on him for a couple hours. His roommate was mysteriously gone. All of these things that, you know, look like he was murdered, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing that always gets me is that is that photo of him being wheeled out. You saw the photo, right? Where you see him, he's purple. He's on his back. His eyes are closed.
No, and this was him dead.
He wasn't actually dead at that point.
He was clinging to life.
He died at the hospital later on. Again, died. Air quoting that shit. And so, but I'm like, it's such a perfect shot because you get this perfect profile shot of him from someone across the street with a high power lens on a nice looking DSLR. They were able to get this just perfect looking shot of him coming out enough to make everyone go, holy shit, he's fucking dead. And it just, again, it's like this dude has got information on everybody.
Yeah.
He's got information on fucking everybody. He knows everyone. We know most of, we don't even know all that he's done, but we know enough to condemn and to burn him alive, that sort of thing.
Right.
Now, it's like, why wouldn't he broker some of that in order to like basically go get a kind of get out of jail free card and then just get facial reconstruction surgery and get the fuck
right.
off. Like I said, it's a conspiracy theory. I don't like to me, something doesn't add the fuck up, and it's not the death that doesn't add up. It's the media and how it was framed and how it happened. It feels like there was a cover up of some kind. And
well, the weird thing is there are reports, his lawyers say, we had a meeting that day and he seemed ready to go forward with the case. He was optimistic, and I'm sure they were having discussions about, listen, you have perhaps the most valuable thing in the world. You have information. And as much as everybody hates you, we could probably get you a deal for 20 years, 25 years. I don't know how old he was. Maybe he would have died in prison regardless. But
yeah,
I mean, turning state's witness, or I mean, it would have been federal witness. But there are people who are too powerful. I mean, once you say, well, I can name Clinton, Hillary shows up in the cell herself.
Yeah, I've seen the memes. I've seen the memes of them showing up and whatnot. And then now there's the photo of, what is it? There's a photo now of Clinton getting a massage from one of the alleged girls that was there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and I think she was one of the girls that was there. I'm saying allegedly because I want to cover my ass legally. Sure. And I don't want to die yet. I want to live to have a good old age. So back off, Clinton. But I mean, but that coming out now, like right before the DNC, like that was fucking planned. And, you know, but then the thing is, like, the media didn't run with it. Like, nothing about Epstein they really ran with.
I mean, Epstein was. Do we know anything about Epstein's funeral? Because it seems like buried in a shallow plot nowhere.
Yeah, I never heard anything about it. I mean, like, Ghislaine Maxwell had like gone off somewhere. Everyone was looking for her, but she never left. That was the thing. She was still around. Like, there was photos of her like at a burger joint or something. Like, she was
right. Did you hear about how she photoshopped those though?
No.
Those pictures were actually a year or two old. And what they did was there was a bus station advertisement behind her for some movie, and they changed it to a recent movie. I don't know which one. And somehow they found the originals and they go, she's not still in America. They just photoshopped this advertisement to make it look like it's a current photo.
Oh, wow.
And that's confirmed. You can look that up.
Okay. No, I believe you because, you know, CBS did that with reruns of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, really? They updated the background?
They would update the background to like showcase either a poster of a new movie that's coming out, or they would even manipulate the TVs in certain scenes.
Wow. Bizarre.
Where they would run trailers for new movies. Like Kevin James is the zookeeper. I think it was a Paramount or something. Or maybe
all blurred three, Till Death Do You Blart.
Yeah.
That's gonna be a
Netflix exclusive here pretty soon.
That was a BoJack Horseman joke.
Oh, well,
that made me laugh.
And I'm pretty sure they're gonna do another Paul Blart movie now that Kevin James has made his way through his neo-Nazi phase. Did you ever see that? The movie Becky?
He's a hardcore Christ warrior conservative. I actually have a buddy who goes to church with him.
So oh, really?
He's a what do you call it? He's definitely a man of Christ.
Hmm.
I know that. So I assume he has conservative, you know,
probably.
Leanings.
Yeah, probably.
Well, he's probably against abortion and those kind of things.
Well, he shouldn't be considering some of the movies he's made.
That's a good thing.
All right. So speaking of aborting, we got to get back on the retort.
Yeah,
we got to talk about this one here. I know it's a good conversation. I love you, Vito. It's a good conversation. So here's what we know. Okay, it's going back to Ethan Ralph's sex tape. So when he released that, we found out that it was the people were asking whether or not it was consensual in its recording. Apparently, it was consensual in its recording. It wasn't consensual in its release, which under Virginia state law is a class one misdemeanor for revenge porn. And so releasing that information, it comes with a maximum 12 months in jail and a $2,500 fine. But the intent of the release, because you do know how it was released or in which context it was released.
Right, and it was sent to her ex-boyfriend or
it was her. Well, not her current. Yeah. Her current. I just interviewed him the other night and that was a fucking weird interview too. He let me interview him. Now I'm trying to interview the dad. That's going to be the next goal.
I'm surprised the whole family and all the people want to get in on it. But
well, the thing is, the dad is pissed, and this is where we start getting funny.
Is that really the dad on Twitter?
Yes, that is really the dad on Twitter. That is really the dad on Twitter, and he is fucking furious.
It's a complicated family.
It's a very complicated one, but. So this guy Chris that she was dating, they've been kind of like together for a number of years online. There's been, you know, he's broken the law in regards to that relationship and in regards to images being sent around, which not good, and completely disavow, and he's got to deal with that himself. But they've been together for a while, and so while she was at Ralph's place, she was sending him like nudes. She was video calling him from Ralph's shower. All this.
And I think I saw part of that stream. So he assumed this was a fling and that they were still together.
Yeah.
And I don't know too much about that relationship. It sounds, again, very complicated and
very complicated. It is your personal stuff here. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because it is now public and it's known and this is what we have. I also like to give everyone the full story. So now the dad's been involved in this one. But one of the reasons why the dad kind of got involved was when Ralph made the relationship with Faith known and he was parading her around. You know, he's like, oh, it's my Zoomer girlfriend. She's 18, you know, and that was like his.
Well, wasn't that something that people kind of did an internet detective thing?
Yes. Yeah, they did a lot of the internet.
He was kind of in a corner, and he had to.
The age difference aside, it's like he still put her out there, and he was making it a big deal. And there's been speculation that he's trying to very much emulate Dick Masterson. And
did he have her? But she's never spoken or anything, right?
I don't know if she's verbally spoken on the show.
When Ralph like said, "This is my girlfriend," she didn't come out and be like, "I love Ralph." And
she didn't say that.
Great.
There was photos of them together. They were doing Storyfire because he joined Storyfire, so they were creating a bunch of content. Like he took her to a museum.
And so she was in videos with him.
In videos with them, and then she was even bringing him booze. On his show. She's 18, right? So it's like you can already kind of gather she's drinking. Which is illegal for her to do, even though he is of age. He's not her guardian or adult.
21's a federal
right? Legal. Yeah. She's 18 and she's, yeah. So I'm we can stupid. Start.
I don't keep track of that stuff.
I had to, cause I worked at places where
is it illegal to serve? I mean, is it illegal within the household to bring your dad a beer? I don't think so.
Because your legal guardian.
Okay.
So the way that the law works is that you have to be a legal guardian or an adult age spouse.
So if you bring a friend over and your daughter theoretically goes to the fridge and gets him a beer, that's illegal.
I don't know if it's, I mean, no one's going to prosecute
on it. No one is going to prosecute.
But you know, the thing here is that admitting.
I don't think anybody's going
to
prosecute.
No one's going to prosecute any of this, to be honest with you. There's no reason why. And that's actually kind of where things start to get funnier is because when you start looking at the dad, this is where the dad comes into play because the dad is furious. Ralph was like fucking with this dude hardcore on Twitter, you know, like, cause he's out there saying like, oh, Ethan's a piece of shit. And then he's like, oh, sorry, I was just balls deep in your daughter. I didn't fucking hear what you said or something. You know, this typical Ralph response to stuff. And so
that's why I thought it was a fake account, because I was like, no way Ralph's talking to her father like this. But if you're confirmed, I don't know how you guys confirmed that it was the actual father.
Yeah.
But,
it was confirmed yesterday, 100%.
Okay, because I saw some people saying it was fake at one point.
Some people were arguing. Yeah, there were some people that were trying to argue that it was all an op and that it wasn't him and that it was her. It was Faith manipulating it. Like she got access to her dad's old account. But then the dad posted a photo of his gun license and a receipt with yesterday's date on it. And then he posted another photo of himself wearing a mask on an airplane. And on the mask, he wrote "Abort the retort."
Yeah, I mean, I can understand having an 18-year-old daughter, and obviously,
he's a questionable moral character.
Describe it right, yeah,
yeah.
You definitely have some reservations. happens.
100% dude. 100%. So you've got that whole scenario play, right? So it's like, you know, and the dad like flew out to DC to like go see her, and like she ended up getting into this like mental ward for 10 days, and she wanted just, it's like she had no knowledge that the tape was released until the doctors at the mental ward told her that the tape was released.
Yikes.
But then she was like, she just wanted to go back to Ethan. And I'm like, look, man, I get it. You know what? Young love. I get that kind of stuff. Right. And I don't fault her for that. But basically her family disowned her right now, because she just wants to go back to Ethan, and the dad's furious. So the dad is getting some sweet ass revenge. He knows he's it's not worth it to him to file a civil suit for the release of the tape. Because it would take a couple years.
Well, wouldn't Faith have to file that? Because she's the situation.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's like, if she wants to do it, I don't know. But then it's even if like a prosecutor, the thing is though, he basically admitted that he's called the local prosecutor, the local DA, to like file a complaint about this. You know what I mean? And he says on Twitter, like, if the DAs or prosecutors are so inclined to prosecute. So that tells me that he has reached out. And then he creates
that Faith would have to be the one to.
If a crime was
revenge porn, I'm gonna,
well, because it was, she didn't consent to its release, and its release was intended to cause harm on the target, which was Chris. So Chris, in this particular situation, at least legally speaking, is the victim of a crime, both harassment and the situation. Now,
this is a complicated law, because the way I understood it, that it was that it was for women who had, you know, had their boyfriend has pictures of them or whatever, that the boyfriend can't release that, and that they can obviously pursue the boyfriend for doing so.
But the thing is, though, is
how can a third party, by showing them, you know, pornography of someone they're not relate? I mean, an ex-boyfriend. I don't understand what the.
So from sure. And I mean, I'm no legal scholar. You're no legal scholar. We're kind of like, you know, ham fisting the soul, you know, we're kind of, you know, eyeballing the law and trying to interpret it the best we can. My interpretation, and again, I could entirely be wrong, and that's fine if I am, is that because according to her dad, she consented to its release, but she didn't consent to its publication. She consented to its filming, but didn't consent to its publication. So it doesn't necessarily, I guess, maybe matter entirely who the intended target was. Ralph knew that he was live streaming because he was in the chat, and he knew because he told him, as he sent it from his personal Instagram DMs, to pull it up on stream. And then even after Chris pulled it up on stream and shut it and like went silent, Ralph was again in the chat mocking him and telling him to pull it up again because Chris kept saying this wasn't Faith. So we know. And then you have people like Dick Masterson that's like, oh, he was hacked. And he's trying to like argue all of these different areas of bullshit. And it's
I think he's joking there.
Maybe. But people are taking this pretty seriously. And so Dick.
Have the stream, obviously.
Yeah. Like, it's like, how did it get from his phone to streamable? Like, that's the question I have, you know?
The thing I want to bring up is that I don't even think you need to talk about revenge porn. I think it's just. It's illegal to publicly release sexual content of someone without them. I don't know if it's sign or release or just they, you know, consent to it. Because there's an expectation of privacy, obviously, in a home. I would think.
It's kind of like
expectation of privacy. I mean, like you can't film someone in your bathroom without their consent, you know, stuff like that. Although she obviously consented to being filmed. So it's more the publication where I feel like it would be a thing where she didn't sign a consent form. She didn't say, you know, you have the right to publicize that. But again, I would assume that, you know, the father can't file those charges. And obviously the ex-boyfriend can. I think it would be the only person who could file that would be Faith, because she's the person who potentially there's damages or what do you call it? Loss of reputation.
Yeah.
Damaged reputation.
The thing is, a crime was committed irregardless of how you want to assign victim was.
Right. Well, no, because is it a crime if they, after the fact, go, no, I'm okay with it?
If they went that, I haven't heard that publicly yet, and I don't think anyone else has either.
But I don't think you can, as far as I understand, like, I don't know how you can look at that situation. I think if somebody after the fact goes, oh, no, I'm okay with that. It's like, again, do you want to press charges? No, officer, I don't want to press charges.
Well, see, the thing is, though, but again, pressing charges is a common misconception about the law.
Technically has been committed.
So, well, the reason why, though, is because, yes, a crime has technically been committed. And then so at that point, if it's reported to the police, a complaint is filed, essentially. Yeah. And they become aware of the crime, then the police themselves will file a report and that will then go to the DA. The DA will then look at the documents, the evidence and everything, and ask themselves, and they'll ascertain the idea of whether or not they can get a win. Then
if you're the victim of assault, can someone else on your behalf say this person was the victim of assault and I want you, the cops, to do something about it?
If you have video evidence of a person being assaulted and that person still doesn't say anything, the video evidence still exists. So
can you prosecute someone on assault without a...
Yeah, because...
I guess you can, right?
You can, you absolutely can, because it's
hard to stick without the victim to actually come out and say,
yeah,
what happened there.
Well, it's kind of like, how do they convict somebody for murder without a body? Right.
Yeah.
Like they're able to do it. There's, you know, they have procedures in place to get to enough evidence to basically go, we know this person did it. Here's all of our evidence. We just don't have the body. And it's like up to the jury to decide.
Give me your summary of what you think constituted illegal behavior.
The releasing of the tape in a harassing manner.
The boyfriend have damages there, you're saying?
Because I think he might on the harassment part. Again, I believe two class one misdemeanors were committed. The revenge porn and the harassment under Virginia law. And I think that's also what the dad has been looking into, but the dad also knows he's not stupid. The dad also knows that seeking legal justice here is probably not going to be ascertained.
Well, because... the dad, I think the boyfriend, yeah. Sorry, my alarm's going off. I could see what you're saying about potentially it being a harassment thing where, you know, you're obviously bothering someone with sexual content that maybe they haven't consented to.
Yeah.
But the dad was not directly sent the content. So you don't think he would have a...
No, well, I'm not too sure what the... Yeah, I don't know what he's been able to do. I mean,
like he's saying I have a claim of harassment because I was also, you know, watched the sex tape. Well,
then I have a feeling a lot of people would be suing Ethan Ralph right about now. Although, hey, listen, the year's not over yet. 2020 has been crazy enough as it is. But this is what the thing is, though. The dad now is not on the legal... is not on the legal shit anymore. He's not talking about that. Yeah, now he's going an entirely different direction. So there's now a website that has been created called aborttheretort.com.
I assume it's a website to try and damage Ralph's reputation.
Yes, it's a website. It hasn't been, it's been purchased and there's been a couple assets there. I do know that there have been web developers that have reached out to Mr. Vickers to be able to help him design the website because they are not fans.
Interactive flash elements.
It's going to be like witness flash the guns in real time. Flash. Yeah. It's going to be pretty bad. But so they're building this website. And then also the dad put out on Twitter that he wants to, he asked a question like, could I basically purchase Ethan's house? Because he's renting it. And contact the landlord and buy the house. Apparently so, because he deals in coins.
Buying every house that Ralph moves into, I feel like at a certain point,
true. But the value, I think the value on Ethan's house is very low. Is from my understanding. I don't know the Zillow rates of it.
They own the mortgage.
I think
you can't force them to sell.
True. No. They don't have the mortgage. They don't have the mortgage anymore.
Okay, they're renting it.
They're renting it. Yeah. I don't know the full specifics, but from my understanding, and again, if I'm wrong, please correct me in the chat. From my understanding, they came under some financial problems and they were forced to like sell the house, but then become renters of the house that they did own. And I could be wrong on that. If someone,
that's how situation that could happen.
Yeah. And so at this point, if the father, if Mr. Vickers is so inclined, and he did say he's going to be writing a letter to the landlord next week to inquire about potentially purchasing the home.
It would be a great, great inconvenience to Ralph.
It would be.
Again, yeah. I think you have diminishing returns when you got to buy the next house in line and the next house in line.
Yeah, no. I think
that's the ultimate troll move. I see what he's.
And this is the whole reason why I think it's fucking funny. For one, I don't think he's ever going to do it. I don't think he's ever going to do it.
Do they live in the same state? No.
Vickers, Faith and her dad, the family, they're from Northern California.
Buying a house to own the occupant. It's a bold move, Cotton.
Lord.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
I'm just saying it's one of those situations, and this is just what I've been reading online today. Like, this guy is you can tell, like, he's pissed. He is furious at what happened. Yeah. And like the fact now
I think we can all identify with that. I don't want, if I had a 18-year-old daughter, I don't want her porn of her distributed. It must be a nightmare for him.
Yeah, and so now, and then also...
Something.
I'm surprised
that he is internet savvy and has these troll ideas. I would expect this to be a young man's game, but...
Yeah, well, he's only 43.
Wow, so it's a young love all across the board.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like he's 43 and I mean, I'm 38. I don't know how old you are, but like, you know, that's not much older than. Yeah. Shut the fuck up, Vito.
Living that young life.
Sure. Yeah. Buying that Belle Delphine bathwater.
Fortnite. What else do I love? I love Paw Patrol. That's a little too young. I don't know what kids do these days. I
have a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. We watch like Toy Story. That's about it.
There you go.
But I mean, like, the way I'm sitting here and I'm like, when I was reading these tweets and I'm looking into the situation, I was sitting here going, I've never seen this kind of power move. But in all the years I've known Ralph, and I've known him for about 6 years now, and all the shit that he's pulled, and it's been innumerable amounts of shit that he's pulled, I always said one day he's going to fuck with the wrong person. And he's going
I think everybody eventually you get to that.
Oh, I've done it. Absolutely. You know, I fucked my own shit up 2 years ago.
You got to hope that you don't get sued, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a big factor in all this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, you and I were sitting here, we're speculating, we're joking. And that's our First Amendment right to do. I just want to make sure that's abundantly clear.
And also, by First Amendment, I don't know any facts or figures. This is all new information to me.
I wanted to get your.
I don't want to see a porn tape. So anything connected to the porn tape, I'm like, I don't need to look into this. Things in my life. I don't need to think about this.
It's been a weird month for porn tapes because I've seen both Ray Park and Ralph's dick in like a 2-week period.
About that statement. It's been a weird month for porn tapes.
It really has been. It's been a weird time for that. People just kind of releasing all that shit. COVID. Ray Park. Darth Maul. Darth Maul.
Oh, right.
Because he had that. Yeah. He.
Did they accuse him of beating up his wife or something?
Nah, that was proven to be false. But the thing is, see, I'm actually calling that into question a little bit. And the reason why is because there was a Snapchat from like his daughter, apparently, that had been like accusing him of being physically and emotionally abusive towards them. And so I was a little bit concerned about that at the time. And then the wife came out and she was like, no, that's not true. That's fake.
Down the stairs into his fist several times.
But then you have the whole situation with the tape itself, the video itself, which shows someone appearing to be Ray Park's wife. Clearly performing an act on somebody else, right?
Was this on his Instagram or something?
Yes.
Do you believe that he posted it or the wife posted it?
Well, no, it was her statement. He hasn't said anything publicly about this.
Yeah.
But her statement was it was an accidental posting. That's the story they're going with, that it was simply done in accident.
A lot of work to accidentally post whole thing.
It's not like posting it to Twitter where you just go, go to the little image button and then click post something. And then like it just auto imports and you post it. You know, Instagram is like, select it, select your filter, type in your text, hit publish. There's different acts you have to do. There's different steps. And so that was the thing with that I had to crack up the most. That this was a deliberate move on his part. And I think they're just trying to use it was an accident to make it all go away. And the truth is it did. It made it all go away. Like no one's talking about it.
Darth Maul. We don't want to think of Darth Maul doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
Other than Qui-Gon. But
justice for Qui-Gon, man. Justice for Qui-Gon.
It's one of those things where, again, you just don't want to think about it. You're like, there's no way that Cosby could have raped all those women. He just sells Jell-O Pops. He's fine. And then it just keeps coming out, and you go,
What was in those Jell-O Pops? Quaaludes.
Did you ever see there's an episode of the Cosby Show where he has a special barbecue sauce that makes people want to have sex?
No.
There's an episode where he's like doing barbecue and his wife's like, why does everybody love your barbecue? And he's like, did you ever notice after they eat my barbecue, everybody gets all heebie-jeebie and then they pan around and everybody's fawning on each other and rubbing each other. And Cosby's secret barbecue sauce makes you want to... all the clues were there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there's... maybe
Matt,
so. Maybe our...
a dry mouth. I go grab a
glass
of water.
Go grab a drink. Yeah, I'm drinking my water right now. All right, let me look at the chat here. Let's see here. PPP is going to talk to Maddox. Is that confirmed? Because I'm kind of curious about that one. I've been asked if that was going to happen, but I don't know yet. Let's see here. All right. What's going on with AIDS House? What's the Count of Maddox Crisco? Euro says Jarbo was right. Not too sure about what. Euro says Jarbo debate me on BVS. Why? I would just win. I'm just telling you that right now. Euro says I would just win.
And I'm awesome. Prepared. Loving chat.
The chat's they're talking about
no problem with the chat room.
No, they're pretty chill right now. They're not
saying Maddox going on PPP.
I mean, I think a lot of people want that. At this point, there's been a pretty big, you know, kind of like movement against that side of things. And I know you've been on.
Crazy about me is I didn't know anything. I'm an idiot. Those people, like, I was like, someone's like, oh, did you ever hear about this lawsuit between Dax and Maddox? And I'm like, I don't know who those people. I know Maddox had that site where he makes fun of kids' drawings 10 years ago. I don't know who any of these other people are. So
yeah, I got I made the mistake of wading into that fight, you know, because I was.
I saw that.
I made an enemy in Dick, and that was actually pretty funny today too, because I had tweeted at Mr. Victor's, and I was like, hey, can I, you know, would you like to come on my stream and like talk about the situation, you know? And he politely declined, but like Dick, you know, who doesn't follow me and I don't follow him, happened to be on that thread randomly. And quote tweeted me and was all like mocking me for it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing?
Just to put it out there, I'll admit I'm a pussy and a fence sitter, and I've obviously been on Dick's show, and I'm obviously talking to you. And
yeah,
I don't get involved in the drama. I see the drama, and I go, you know what? I don't know. I don't want to get involved too deeply.
Yeah, I wouldn't
assume
like.
I assume you guys are going to fight it out and eventually hopefully come to some sort of understanding, even if the understanding is that you continue to hate each other. So just to put it out there, I don't have a stake in this fight, but don't mistake me having been on Dick's show a number of times as me fully endorsing any action he might take.
Yeah, no, I don't think, I mean, I know you well enough to know that's the case.
Yeah, I chat with you on to Twitter every now and again.
Yeah, we chit chat. You've been on a charity stream of mine before, and that was a good amount of time. That was fun. So I get that, dude. Like, and the thing is, like, I think a lot of people at this point, it's kind of like they get, like, people have associations. People are always gonna have associations, some good, some bad. Like, you know,
I mean,
like
people right now in the chat, I see it where they're going, you know, Vito's the guard for Dick.
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
I never said this to Dick. We never had a conversation, but he went, I run this thing, New Project 2. It's a, an alternative to Patreon. And I went and I looked at it, and it's, guys like, I don't even know if I can say his name on YouTube, Richard S.
Yeah. Mr. Pepe Punchface, right?
That Soph girl. Also, a lot of, controversial personalities.
Yeah.
And I said, I have no interest in being a part of this. If for some reason I was deplatformed, which I hate to say it, I keep my channel non-political. I'd just rather talk about Star Wars and not wade into the garbage. So anybody who thinks I'm defending New Project 2, I never wanted to be a part of it. I never endorse it. And, you know, it's gone. Whatever happened there, I don't know.
I'm not too sure what happened. I just know that it's gone. That's about what something with the payment processor is what I know.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know how that happened. Like, I'd heard through the grapevine, you know, that it was like that it had gone away. Like, that's all it was. And that's the thing. I think
this happened to Subscribestar, where the credit card companies, the payment processors, can drop you for any reason. They could say you're not allowed to process Visa payments. You're not allowed to process MasterCard payments. And, you know, what are people going to do? Start sending a check every week to support your work? No, they're going to put it on their credit card. So once you're dropped from the payment processors, what can you do? You can't process payments. You're done.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what happened, is that he lost the payment processors, which I believe, I don't know if Subscribestar got them back. I haven't looked at Subscribestar in a while.
They're still pretty active, so probably. And I know, like, when
pay for it with a credit card, I don't know.
I don't. Yeah, I have no idea. And I feel PayPal,
people on Patreon, obviously, it's linked to my credit.
It's all weird. I mean, Patreon. They're in their own world of shit with that Owen Benjamin case, and
I think. Bankrupt them. Maybe. I don't understand. I mean, the amount they have to pay for each arbitration is, no matter what, for each arbitration they have to pay $10,000. And I believe there's 100 claimants who could demand arbitration. And the judges said, under the law, you have to pay for the arbitration for each of these people who wants to engage in it. If I was Patreon, my God, I'd say, listen, let's broker a deal. We'll bring back Owen Benjamin. We'll bring back Lauren Southern. We'll bring back whoever you want. We cannot. It's a lot of money. I'm not bad at math, but I believe that's in the millions of dollars if everybody got together and demanded arbitration.
Yeah, no.
Every single person has been banned. Their terms of service very clearly laid out that $10,000 for each case.
Well, and at this point, I believe it's they've changed their terms of service to make sure you couldn't do that again. So they've covered their ass on that front.
Judge is they changed the terms of service to, if you continue using Patreon, you agree to forfeit your right to sue us. So that way, a user, they go, oh, there's a new terms of service update. You're not going to read it. And they go, yeah, if you stay with us, you tacitly agree that the old terms of service no longer apply to you. And the judge was like, woo, what a move, guys. Not happening.
Yeah.
Threw that right on out. He's like, that's not how we do things. Sorry.
And I, you know what? It's like, and I'm okay with Jack Conte getting a little bit bitch slapped. I am. I'm 100% okay with that, because I've always felt like, you know, there's like, he always puts on that smile. And I think, like, originally the smile was legitimate, because I used to watch the Pompamoose videos before Patreon, where him and his wife, they would do the music stuff. And I really liked it. Thought they did. some good shit. And then they do Patreon and it blows up to what it is. And then it's like, now, you know, he goes, oh, I talked to other tech company CEOs, like billionaires that have all this money. And it's like, the thing is, I think he's insulated when it comes to, you know, Silicon Valley. Like, if he were to find himself in a situation where they could potentially have to file bankruptcy over these arbitrations, I'm sure he would get bailed out.
Like, well, they would probably just start a new service under a new name, and he's protected, you know, because it's a company. It's not him, I assume.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's probably under an LLC of some kind.
I think that would be an option for them. Here's the real tragedy of Patreon, though, is, I mean, it's a service-based website that runs itself. How many coders do you need to update the back end? 5, 6?
Yeah.
But the venture capitalists come in, and all of a sudden, it's no longer to empower the creator. It's to generate money for whatever shareholder, you know, company owner, which is why we saw the percentages change. Do you remember that happened?
Yeah,
in like the past few months? I forget the exact percentage, but if you already had a Patreon, you're grandfathered into the previous rate, which is what, 3%. And I think for new if you open a Patreon now, it's bumped up to 4.5 or something like that. And that's the tragedy, is a guy like Jack Conte who goes, I just want to empower the creator. You know, venture capitalists show up and tell you you're going to make $1 billion. It's a hard offer to turn down.
Yeah.
And that is the tragedy of, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Patreon, it does well for me and they take their cut. I just want to make sure it's sustainable and they don't all of a sudden decide, you know, we're going to keep jacking these rates up. We're going to find, and they keep there, you know, that's the thing. Once they get the money, they start wasting it on the stupidest stuff. I don't know. Do you get these emails about these Patreon meetups and they're renting a hall and you can go and eat a free cheeseburger and whatever? I'm like, you don't need to do that.
I get emails.
I don't meet all the other patron people.
Yeah. I've gotten a couple of those emails that email me like, it's about damn time we talk or something like that. They'll some kind of provocative title in the email.
That title. What's that guy? He uses it every time. We need to talk about X. And I don't know why that title always draws eyeballs, but every time I see it, I'm disgusted. It's time we talk about, you know, the plight of the blue whale. It's not time to talk about anything. Call your video something else. I hate it.
I think this is one of those things where people, when it comes to the type of titling on YouTube, like, I'm terrible at titling and I'm terrible at like all that shit.
You know, my most popular video is The Last Jedi is a complete cinematic failure.
Yeah.
I pulled that title out of my butthole. Honestly, if you watch the video, which I had to delete the opening, the original title was 10 Reasons The Last Jedi is a Cinematic Abortion. But I realized you can't put abortion in the title. So I went, all right, well, what can I put here? Because I can't, if I name the movie, the title Abortion, I'm sure the algorithm will dig it down. And yeah, it's the title. It's a very interesting game of trying to figure out a title and a thumbnail. And
oh yeah,
that fucking YouTube robot, man. That's the most horrible thing. Did you see this thing I tweeted recently where a guy goes to YouTube creators and he goes, "Listen, when I'm trying to monetize my video, there's a checkbox that says, does your video contain information about sensitive political issues?" And he goes, "That's a very broad description. Do you have a document somewhere that gives me an example of what a, you know, a sensitive political discussion might be?" And YouTube goes, "Well, we can't give you that information because you might abuse it."
Actually, that happened to me at VidCon last year.
Yeah, if you ask them, like, what are the rules, they go, "We can't tell you, just fight our robot."
Yeah.
Just every day try to trick it into putting you into the trending category. This is an Orwellian nightmare that I have to fight a stupid robot to get my videos seen. It's insane.
I
want
to
fight people. I want a person to sit down and go, okay, this video's fine. This video's bad. It's a nightmare.
It is a nightmare. It is a nightmare. And the algorithm, I mean, like, I went to a YouTube training session down in Culver City, November 2018. And I went now for 2 days and like I talked to engineers and people there and I was asking them questions and whatnot. And the thing is like they couldn't really give me any solid answer on anything. I'm like, this is weird. Like, I'm at YouTube's headquarters here in LA. you fuckers work on the platform. How the fuck do you not know the fuck I'm asking you, right?
And the worst thing about it is, you know that any top creator, a guy like Will Smith, any one of these manufacturer persons, someone like Brie Larson, you know that they're getting the sit-down meeting with YouTube, and YouTube goes, look, here's how to beat the robot.
Well, they must.
But we don't get that information. We're not the A-list celebrity talent that YouTube wants to cultivate.
I also think, so in some cases, I agree. In other cases, I don't, only because of what I know about how the algorithm works and everything else. But then again, that changes so rapidly. You know, the information I have could be outdated. So last summer, when I went to VidCon, I had a partner manager at the time, and he was like, hey, do you want to go to like the YouTube space? And I was like, yeah, all right, that sounds like a lot of fucking fun. And I go up there and whatnot, and oh my God, it's everything's catered. They had like gift bags everywhere.
I should go there.
You should go there. You should.
You can just go there if you have like a certain amount of subs, right?
No, well, no, they had to invite me in. I had to go get a wristband for it.
Yeah.
So they don't just invite anybody in. Like, I got in because my partner manager, I think, took pity on me. And like, do you want
to
go?
We're gonna find a way to salvage this.
Yeah, it's like, well, because the thing is,
get you a free lunch.
Yeah, you'll get you a free. Oh, you want to go to the YouTube party? I'm like, yeah, I go to the YouTube party. I left after 30 minutes.
The only good thing about Hollywood or Silicon Valley is the free lunch, man. I've been to that Google campus. I've been on the Warner lot. Ugh, that free lunch is the real deal.
That is, yeah.
Look, I'm a big boy. I like a free lunch. I'm not allowed to go to the Warner campus anymore. They changed the rules because everybody was bringing their friends in there. It's like, they're like, we don't employ this many people. Why are 20,000 people showing up at lunchtime every day? Everybody's bringing their spouse and their kids.
Yeah, I'll hear stories from like people I know that are like, oh, I was having lunch on the Paramount lot with like J.J. Abrams, and it's, you know, this guy, you're like, all right, I just want to go. Like, I used to be the social media director of this nonprofit out of L.A. called the Scriptwriters Network. And so they brought me on, like they literally made me a board member of this nonprofit because I worked their Twitter and their Facebook. But it came with some perks, like we'd go out, we'd get like dinner once a month and, you know, whatever. It was fun. And and so like one time, once a month, we would meet on the Universal backlot. So I'd get and I lived like within like 5 minutes driving of Universal at the time. So I would just drive over to Universal and I'd go in and get my little pass and I'd park and I'd walk around the backlot, which is, I mean, that's fucking cool to me. Like, to
it's
me, that's
crazy,
like,
that you would think that somebody would get mad at you. But those backlots are just like, they're like, yeah, whatever.
They don't care. They don't give a shit. I'm walking around and like I look lost and like no one gives a shit. But what's funny,
you're just any low level guy working there, and they probably got 100.
They have, oh yeah, and you know, like I'm walking by the different sound stages where they were like shooting Weeds at the time and a couple other shows. And what was funny was they did like the backlot tour. And so I had people like, they were like the people on the little bus, you know, the little shuttles or whatever. And they're walking, they're coming at me and everyone pulls out their fucking camera. Right. And they all look at me with their camera and I'm like, okay. So I just played up. I'm like, how's it going, everyone? Welcome to Universal. And I just started playing it up and they all start taking pictures of me.
Wait, really?
They did. Yeah, they did. And cause this happened a couple times, cause I kind of look like Kevin Smith from a distance. Before, like, this was in 2012, so this was way pre heart attack. He, you know, when he was still a fat bastard,
when he was still a big boy,
he was still a sturdy fella, yeah. And so I they probably thought I might have been Kevin Smith or something, you know. But like,
yeah.
I'm like, I'll take it. Fuck if I
you went gonna... snoochie boochies, everybody.
I think I actually did one time because this was pretty. It was pretty much every month as I was.
Happened more than once.
I think I said it. So they're going to get home and look at their camera and go like, "This isn't fucking Kevin Smith. It's a fucking fat fuck, fucking cheeses." So that
the
was...
only celebrity I ever got mistaken for was the fat kid from Hot Tub Time Machine.
Clark Duke.
Before I had a beard, and when I was like, you know, young, like 16, 17, I looked exactly like Clark Duke. Like, he had a very small appearance in Superbad, where I think he just yells, like, hey, what's going on? And everybody came out of that movie and they went, hey, you're the fat kid from Superbad. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Everybody stop making fun of me. then that was just my nickname for at least what people tease me with. And I finally met Clark Duke at outside Harmontown, the podcast, Dan Harmon's podcast. And I got a terrible fuzzy photo with him to prove to everyone that I am not Clark Duke.
Yeah, but they're just going to say it's photoshopped.
Yeah, that's true. We do look exactly the same in the picture.
That's crazy, man. I never really met a lot of celebrities when I worked in LA. I met a few here and there. I remember one night my buddy calls me up. Like, I was going to go see, I think it was Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the first part one. And he's like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, oh, I'm going to go down to Burbank and go check out Harry Potter. He's like, oh, dude, yeah, I want to come with. What are you doing before then? Like, nothing. He's like, you want to go hang out with Zach Ward?
Hey,
and Zach Ward, if you don't know, if you've ever seen A Christmas Story, is Scott Farkas, the redhead bully.
Yeah,
he lived around the corner from me in NoHo, because I lived in the arts district of North Hollywood, you know, like the up and coming district. And that I swear to God now, like the rent is worth more than my mortgage. So
I can't live directly in the city. It's too much. And I might, if this whole virus thing keeps up, everybody, the exodus is coming. Everybody's leaving California because there's no reason to stay. There's no job opportunities. There's no jobs.
Even my stepdad out of San Diego's, he got kind of forcibly retired because the company he was working for ran out of funding. They were doing medical stuff, like medical engineering. And he'd been doing that his entire career. And he was just kind of like riding out the clock until disability could kick in for him. He could actually retire. And then that just came, you know. So they're just like, they're basically just scooping everything up and getting the fuck out of Dodge.
So you hung out with Farkas?
I did. We went drinking. One of the things I learned from the couple times I went out with some of these actors is that they purposefully put themselves in situations where they will be recognized. And this was...
Sure, it's a huge ego boost.
It's a huge ego. Sure. Oh, total.
And, I mean, have you ever had the thing where, like, just in public, somebody comes up to you and goes, hey, are you Matt Jarbo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's happened. Yeah. It's happened.
The other day I was at GameStop wearing a mask. I don't know how this guy recognized me. He goes, are you a YouTuber? I'm like, yeah. He goes, are you Vito? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, dude, me and my girlfriend were watching your Star Wars video last night. And I'm like, all right. I'm fake famous. I love it.
I had a guy at came up to me and my girlfriend. We were pushing our daughter in the mall in her stroller. And he comes over and he's like, are you Mundane Matt? And I'm all like, yeah. And he's like, oh man. And I look down and his hand is visibly shaking. He's shaking.
My God.
And then I look at,
weird. Yeah,
it's so weird. And then what I like to do is I like to go, do you want a hug? You know? And like, because I feel it diffuses the situation. It like, it just breaks that tension. You know what I mean? So he's like, oh yeah, yeah. And I just give him a big hug. And I'm like, hey, how's it going, dude? You know? And we talk for a few, and he's like, oh, is this your baby? I'm like, yes, my daughter. And he's like, oh, I got my kids over here. So he's like, pulls out his phone, like shows me photos of his kids and shit. I mean, it's just a fun exchange.
It's very flattering, but it is weird when you want to tell these people, listen, I live in a shitty one-bedroom apartment. I'm not a real celebrity here. So don't get too excited.
Yeah, I jerk off to the same porn you do. It's nothing.
For sure. It was great. For some reason, I was walking around IKEA and I just tweeted out, hey, hanging out at the IKEA. And as I'm like about to leave, like three teenagers, young guys are like, oh, man, we've been looking for you this whole time. And I'm like, what do you? They're like, we saw your tweet that you're at IKEA and we were in the IKEA. I'm like, holy Lord.
That happened to me at Comic-Con a couple years ago.
Oh, really?
I was in line to play Dead Rising 4 at like the Capcom booth.
Yeah.
It's like on preview night. And so I just took a picture of it and I said, oh, I'm at the Capcom booth waiting to play Dead Rising 4. And then maybe like 10 minutes later, it's like little dude shows up. He's like, hey, are you Mundane Matt? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, hey, what's up, man? I saw your tweet that you were here. I'm a nice guy. I'm a really nice guy. I talked to the guy for a bit while I played my demo and shit. And then I'm like, you know, walking around, and then the dude just like tags along, and I'm like, oh no. Fuck, like, oh, fuck me, dude. And then just like, I'm running, Because the thing is, like, I'm from San Diego. I lived there for 15 years. So I know at Comic-Con is like, you know, people at Comic-Con, like you will run into everyone, you know, at Comic-Con. So I'm running into like everyone I know. And like, we haven't seen each other in a long time. And so we're hanging out. And then this guy's like right there. And I'm like, I don't want to be a dick, but like, fuck, dude, you know? And then he just hung out, kind of clung around for like 2 hours. And I just felt really bad because I'm like, this is my vacation with my, like, I hate with what this is like when I only get to see these people like once a year, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't, you're a nice person, but like, please go the fuck away.
Like, I'm sure there's some guys who, get infatuated. I don't think I've ever had anything like that. I hope.
There's I don't blame anyone for doing it, to be honest with you. I just don't. Because like, it's always an awkward scenario. Like, you go over to see someone, you hang out for a few, and then it's that social awkwardness of like, do I go with you? Do I not go with you? Neither party is saying anything.
Try to walk alongside you and try to make conversation.
Well, that happened at the 2017 VidCon, where, so we all go to VidCon for the first time and everyone's there. And then, so like, you know, like it was only supposed to be like, maybe like a few of us were going to go, but then once word spread of who was going, then all of a sudden a lot more people opted to go, which is great. It was awesome. But because of that, you had some people show up that were viewers that none of us knew. And then they were like, you know, trying to find out where like the party was and where we all were. And we were going different houses. And it was one specific house that we were all going to. And then like another group of people ended up giving out that address to some people that then just showed up and then kept showing up. Like,
I don't know if 2017 was the year I came by one of the parties. It was a night you weren't there, but I pulled up and some YouTube guy was very worried. He's like, who are you? Who are you? And I'm like, I'm Vito. Wang said to come by. And I guess maybe some people had come by and tried to harass them or whatever else. Yeah, maybe it was the same year. I don't know.
Well, if this was last year, I know you showed up to the party last year. And because I hung out with Jeff Holiday yesterday.
I think Jeff Holiday decided he doesn't like me. I don't know. I've never had an interaction. The only interaction I had with him was we took a photo at that party.
Well, I was giving him shit about that party yesterday too. Because he's like, why didn't you show up? But I'm all like, because I knew where the party was. I'd been there the night before, but like I wanted to get permission before I showed up. You know, like I just feel like that's a polite thing to do because it's not my place. And so I just didn't want to show up. I hate that about fucking parties. It's one of the things I personally hate.
You don't
want to
awkwardly
have
everybody looking at you.
When I was there a couple nights earlier, I showed up like with Chris Raygun and we had just had dinner with Maddox. And then like Dick Masterson was at the party. I'm like, fuck, you know, I don't want to deal with this.
I remember hearing that you guys had a little,
it wasn't a confrontation. It was, I'll tell you, this is exactly what happened. And he'll tell his side of the story and he's lying.
Yeah.
So I was talking with the I have no reason to lie in this interaction and I have witnesses. So I get to the party. I see him through the window. I'm like, oh, fuck me. I'm gonna have to deal with this. All right, fine. I'm not going to go back. I'm here. I walk in. I go into the living room of this house. And then all of a sudden the gamer from Mars, I don't know if you know who he is. He does like internet lore stuff.
Okay.
And like, so he's got like, I think around 700,000 subs. He's a good dude. His name's Art. Anyway, Art sees me and he goes like, Monday, Matt. Oh my God, you're here. You know, cause this is a year past the Boulder situation.
Yeah.
So like me going
to these parties, holding a giant Boulder in your hands and you the Boulder has arrived.
See, I feel like I'd be ripping off of Billy the Fridge's whole thing there. Because like Billy the Fridge will show up with like the chain and the donut, you know, now that he's like a skinny fucker because he caught on keto and shit. Good for him, by the way. Good on Billy. But like he goes to costume and but anyway, I go and it's always awkward going to these parties because people know about what happened and then they see me and then they're like, I want to like it constantly comes up in conversation. Right. And so I kind of expect
90% of people had nothing to do with that. So I imagine most people at the party are like, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, no, there was a lot that were like not even give a shit. There were others that were like wanting to like ask questions. And I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, here it is a year afterward and I'm just like owning the meme by making my podcast called that. So basically I'm talking to Art for a while and we're standing in the living room. And then all of a sudden, like, I hear, like, Dame Pesos, like, something about Dame Pesos. And I turn around, and there's Dick. All right? And I'm like, and he's like, hey, what's up, man? And, like, he, like, gives me this hug, you know? And I'm like, you know, oh, no, sorry. You know, he says something. I turn around, I look at him. I kind of give him this, like, cocky look, like, what the fuck, dude, you know? Like, yeah. I know I shot him a glare. And then he kind of immediately backs down, and he goes, like, oh, hey, and then he gives me the hug. And he's like, I just wanted to come over and say hey.
Actually know how so how deep did Dick participate in fucking with you? He wasn't on that stream.
No,
right?
He wasn't on that stream. No. He's mad at me because of the Matt, because I backed Maddox.
You hung out with Maddox. Yeah, because
yeah,
you
I backed Maddox. Yeah. Maddox. And so later on, like, we talked for maybe another second or two. It wasn't much. He went back to what he was doing. And then later on, he was talking with a mutual friend of his and I's. And that guy was talking me up to Dick. He's like, no, Matt's a really good guy. I was down on my luck. He was helping me out, all this shit. And I was, you know, and I pass by and I'm talking to him. And then at this point, it's not Dick. I'm talking to Dax at this point, not, you know, not the actor, the person.
Sure. Yeah.
And then he goes, we're talking for a second. And he just kind of says, he goes, you know what? I think Maddox fucked you. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, I just think he fucked you over because, you know, because, like,
he didn't get behind you.
Yeah, like, he's just like, well, because it gave me bad information, or is that's how my interpretation of it was. And okay. About, because, like, when I covered the Lowell suit, I gave Maddox the benefit of the doubt because I'd met him, we were friends, I didn't know Dick, you know, whatever. So I said, you know what, man, you're probably right. I gave Maddox the benefit of the doubt, and that was my bad. I apologize for that.
Well, the legal argument, I believe, for Maddox was calling him a cuck constituted
it's
slander, yeah. Because he is not literally a cuckold. And the judge, he said, this is essentially the equivalent of calling someone a smuck. I'm pronouncing it wrong. Schmuck. He's like, so I can't proceed with this lawsuit. I think he tossed it out.
It eventually went away. It was a huge fucking embarrassment for all parties involved, in my opinion. Yeah. And as much as I like Maddox, and I still talk to Maddox pretty frequently, I still find that whole thing to be cringe. And I've told him as such. And
Maddox,
so.
Good video production, I'd say. Edit a video.
He has shown me. I was at his house in 2018 when I was in town for that YouTube training. We went out and got dinner before my flight. And I was at his house, and he was showing me some new project he was working on. And, like, yeah, it's like, it's got, like, stop motion animation, and it's got a whole bunch of, like, other types of animation. And it was really good. He's just he's trying to shop it around and see if he can get it somewhere. And I'm like, yeah, that's fucking dope, dude. But anyway, so we're talking for a second with Dick and about the Maddox thing. And then Dick looks at me, and I think he says this without any actual self-awareness, right? He just says, and I'm quoting him verbatim. He goes, you know, it really sucks when people lie about you on the internet. And I just looked at him, and I cocked my head to one side, and I just went, yeah, I know. And that was really about it.
Was that the end of the conversation?
That was we might have, like, you know, I had to go to the bathroom and whatever else, and then
the bathroom, and you guys touch tips.
Docking, a lot of docking happened, you know. Surprisingly, climax as well, who knew. We really bonded that night, you know.
Classic YouTuber etiquette to touch tips.
Yeah, that's our secret handshake. It's surprisingly weird. If one person has foreskin, it just becomes awkward. But yeah, you make it work. Sorry. You know, one person becomes the catcher, one person becomes the pitcher.
I don't want that dork coming near me. Come on, circumcise that thing. It's a joke. Don't circumcise. It's bad.
It goes in the facial products for women.
Come on.
No. I'll tell you this. This is a weird thing. So I'm getting ready to leave maybe, like, about an hour later. And, you know, I'm saying my goodbyes. And, like, look, we had a healthy exchange, Dick and I did. And I was like, you know, maybe I can go and I can, you know, we can leave amicable, which would be fine. Be amicable.
Peace.
Yeah. Right. And so, like, I go over to him, and he's, you know, he's at the center of a group of people. Like, that's what he does. And I said, hey, I'm taking off. I just, you know, want to know, are we cool? And then he just kind of looks at me with this, like, very sociopathic look in his eyes. And he just goes, like, I don't know. Are we cool? It was, like, the stupidest fucking comeback. And I just went, like, whatever. And I left. I'm like, all right, well, he's clearly.
It wasn't a big thing.
It wasn't a big thing, but I was just sitting there going like,
situation.
Yeah, I was like, all right, man, like, you know, clearly it is what it is. I just thought it was funny because, you know, I didn't really talk about it. I didn't talk about it publicly. And then a couple of days later, he did his podcast and he recounted the experience and he totally fucking embellished and made shit up. And then, like, you know, like was stalking my videos once again and shit like that, trying to turn me into this fucking heel. And I'm like, all right, dude, like, whatever, man. Like, you know, like, this is just what you have to do. That's fine. But it really did kind of show me. It's like the way I view it is yeah, I see like Euros in the chats, like some of these internet e-celeb meetups are pretty fucking awkward because they can be. Like, a lot of people will put on this act on camera and that's not who they are in person. And then in other people, it's kind of the reversal where they're just really fucked up in person, but they seem really cool in their videos.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get. And VidCon is fun because it's kind of like everyone coalesces in one particular place. So you really don't know, like, who the fuck you're going to run into. It just really depends. Like, I mean, when I was
ran into Anita Sarkeesian that one year, and that must have been the most awkward thing in the world.
That experience, that was wild because I had, so what it was is in 2016, yep. I had first learned of VidCon in 2016 and I felt bad for not going. I'm like, oh God, fucking damn it. I really wanted to go to this thing. That would have been pretty cool. So I'm like, okay, 2017, I'll go and I'll, you know, and so I put the word out that I was going and a few other people are like, oh, let's go. And then I'm looking through the list of who's going to be there. And lo and behold, Anita is going to be on two panels. And I'm like, no fucking way. So I hit up Sargon of Akkad and I'm all like, Carl, yo, dude, Anita is going to be at VidCon.
We gotta go, bro.
Like, gotta. And then I'm like, not only that, so is Anna Kasparian and Cenk Uygur. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, Anita? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay. And fucking Carl, like within 2 weeks to go, made his way to the US for this shit. But not only that, we had like Dave Cullen from Ireland, and we had like a bunch of other fucking people from around the country and shit.
Yeah.
And so like we knew Anita was going to be there. And the reason why it was kind of important, this moment was important, was because Anita never did anything that could be publicly accessible. She always was in a very controlled environment. And so she never did
comments on her work.
Or if you were going to ask her a question at any one of these events, they were completely curated, meaning, you know, you could ask the question and then the moderator would then find a non-offensive one and ask it. So you could never ask directly. This was completely different. This was going to be open question. This was going to be open floor seating. This was going to be that shit that she hated. And so I thought it would be funny if a bunch of us went to it. And so, but I told everyone, I'm like, listen, you know, she will recognize us. That's going to happen. But we cannot do anything. No tweeting about it beforehand. No taking, nothing harassing. Say nothing, do nothing, be silent and watch. Just, and I'm like, trust me. And so we knew about this going in. And when we got to the panel, because so many people had found out that just who all was going to be there, what I thought was going to be about eight people turned into 30. So we get there and it's like a couple minutes before the panel starts. And there's literally like the first three rows on like one side of this thing are full
pictures. Yeah.
Full of shit lords, you know? And so then if you've seen the video, you've seen her reaction.
Because I assumed, I sometimes something I'm like, ah, the cringe, can't handle it. I know it's going to be cringy.
Oh yeah,
cringy in a way. You guys just cringy in the way people publicly confronting each other. You know.
Oh no, the thing is like her confronting Sargon was somewhat calculated, I think, because if you go, and I would really recommend you watch it after I explained it to you. Yeah. So if you watch the footage of her when she starts to realize who is there, because in the front row, you had Sargon, you had Chris Reagan, you had Chris Worski, Andy Worski, Wizard of Cause, I think Vernaculous, and a few other people. Now, I was fucking like nervous before this thing. I was like butterflies in the stomach. I had to go take a shit. I'm like, you know, my body's like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm making sure you're prepared. So I go to the bathroom, I come back out, and like the front row is entirely full. And I'm like, fuck. All right, fine. So I grab a seat like off to the far right side, second row. And so then I'm watching this again, watch the video. You can see Anita as she's panning her way through the audience. And she starts to recognize Sargon and Chris and Andy and all those guys. And then she starts scanning and scanning and scanning, and you see her stop. And then you see her expression kind of drop or become very sour. And then she reaches for her phone. Who was she looking at when she reached for her phone?
Was it you?
It was me. It was me. A
thorn in the side.
Oh, man. 100%. And that was when she put the call in for backup. And the funny thing was, like, we were respectful. She started calling out Sargon, making it a scene. Yeah. And it was funny because, like, it was unprovoked entirely. It was a complete defensive maneuver, and she probably didn't even think it through, but she got scared. And I feel bad here, you know, years later. I didn't really think about that, like, from her perspective. I didn't think about what she would think if, like, 30 of her detractors showed up right there. Like, is she going to get mobbed or some shit, right? I can understand that fear now.
It's one of those things where I think you have to go, you know what, I'm going to push through, and that'll show these guys I'm not intimidated. But that's probably a hard thing to do on the spot.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, though, is that they did open it up for Q&A, and a bunch of dudes did get confrontational with this panel.
Yeah.
But the one person who made the biggest impression, I forget exactly what he says, but it was Joey fucking Salads.
Yeah.
He made some comment. I forget what it was, but it was like, you know, congressional candidate Joey fucking Salads, Mr. Drinks His Own Piss, Joey fucking Salads, was like talking all this shit to Anita and whatnot. And it ended up like being really funny, because before the end of the panel, all of a sudden, like four or five more security guards appeared out of nowhere and like stood in front of the stage. You know,
people get ejected from VidCon?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, I take that back. One person did, because there was an attempt to forge.
Hold fire alarms or something?
No, forge badges. This is before they went to RFID. This is when they just had the laminates.
And so, but nobody who got drama or anything.
No one. I don't know who it was. I think it might have been No Bullshit. Might have just walked. I think No Bullshit, if you ever
heard
that
of him. Guy is out there.
Yo, he's out there, but he got drunk and he blacked out during one of the panels. I didn't know that it was No Bullshit. I just walked by this fat dude slumped over, passed out. Like,
No Bullshit. I'm always fighting with that guy on Twitter for some reason.
He's a weirdo. Yeah. Like, Brooks has always been like cordial to me. And so we don't fight, but like, yeah, his takes are out there. And anyway, so Anita had another panel 2 days later, and we all went to that one. But the thing was, is security, now they were apprised of our presence, and so they doubled up on security, and they brought in the elite black suit security guards.
And they're watching us,
yeah. And they had, in fact, asked us if we would separate, because we had all congealed into one location beforehand.
You were around.
Yeah, they want us to kind of separate out a bit. We're like, all right, fine, that's cool. We have no problem. We're being exceptionally, you know, exceptionally... Yeah.
We weren't
there to cause shit. We were just there to listen.
We're rabble rousers, but we're not here to stir anything up.
Yeah, exactly. And so we end up doing all that. And then at one point, I'm talking with somebody, and I lean over and I just ask him a question. I lean over to tell him a joke. And as I lean over, I look up, and there is like this one security guard, black suit, sees me lean over. And I'm like seven rows back. I wasn't even front up. I was like seven rows back. He moves like he pulls a lateral move. And by the time I get done telling the joke and I look back, he's gone. And he is now at the edge of my row staring at me like this motherfucker.
You thought you were going to pull something.
Yeah. Yeah. They were looking at us. I guarantee you, because of the controversy of us being there. Even though we had not done anything, that they had created a dossier on all of us. Like, they knew who we were.
They got pictures. They got stats.
Yeah, they probably were like, all right.
Speed 3, power 5, and a magic stat 2.
Yeah, pretty much. You know what I mean? Like, his charisma's at an 8, fireball. So we're good.
Yeah.
You know, it was just fucking funny because they had all this shit. They thought we were really going to, like, that we were going to, you know, act terribly. But what was funny was she was on a panel about internet harassment. Yeah. And so it was her and it was Boogie. And it was a couple other.
Yeah.
It was a couple other women that were on there, too. So Boogie's the only dude. And Anita was kind of running the convo. She was kind of leading the charge, most of it. Right. And so she's like, oh, it's all harassment. It's all harassment. It's all harassment. And then the other women were like playing it up a little bit. Yeah, it's a lot of harassment. And Boogie's like, well, I mean, you know, you can always kind of choose to not give a fuck. I'm paraphrasing. And then
I don't want to hear that. And then
Anita's like, no. Right. But then it's when Boogie said that it was a Viner. I forget her name, like Megan something. She had a high pitched voice, you know,
all those Viners.
Yeah. But this girl, she was blonde girl, had a real high pitched voice.
Yeah.
I forget her name, but I actually enjoyed her vines. And she was there and she goes, you know what I do, man? I make videos where I just get drunk and read mean comments. And so, you know, and then the other girl's like, yeah, no, I do the same thing. It's funny. And then Anita now had lost that power she had where she was kind of like, you know, us, you know, sovereignty or solidarity, you know, all this shit. And the other girls are like, yeah, you know, we just make fun of the mean comments because they're stupid. And then at the end of it, Boogie had prepared this statement where he wanted to, like, you know, he had this, he had been practicing.
Let's bring everybody together. The classic Boogie. Why don't we just all be nice to each other?
Yeah, it was a lot like that, but it was also like anyone can be harassed is more or less what it is. Like, it's not just one gender over another because Anita tries to play up that card because that's her angle. And Boogie put this out there and Anita didn't get the last word. Boogie got the last word. And it might be because Boogie's got more subscribers than Anita does. So on that hierarchy, on that pecking order, he's up there. And
progressive.
Yeah. And then, so he does that. And then Anita chews him the fuck out when the panel was over.
Right. And he tweeted about it. He's like, Anita was mean.
I knew about it. He tweeted about it later on, but he told me about it not first, but I ran into him that night. And as I was getting ready to go back to my hotel, I ran into him and he told me about the whole situation and I'm like, fuck dude. Like that. Yeah. That seems like Anita. She was challenged and she kept getting BTFO'd across the board and she couldn't fight back in the way she's, you know, so she's trying to like control the narrative. And
back when we all felt bad for Boogie, because he didn't constantly set his life, whatever, is falling apart every couple of weeks.
I don't know. Yeah, I like Boogie a lot. I really do. I want to try to get him on here to have a chat one night because I also want to ask him, like, what's going on?
Yeah, I saw him at E3 and he was nice enough to stop and let me shoot a little 20-second thing harassing him. Seems like a nice guy. I think he's got to sit down and be like, all right, I'm going to space these woe is me posts out every 3 months.
Yeah.
Forget it, Boogie. Your life is falling apart and you were abused as a child or whatever else. Just, I can't. There's only so much of your pain I want to take on to myself. At a certain point, I'm like, okay, Boogie, this is too much. You're asking too much of your audience. We feel bad for you. All right? Take the amount of goodwill you got and run with that.
Didn't he do a thing the other day where he was like, I only got 20,000 views on this video, but I'm really thankful for the 20,000 views?
I don't know. He's always saying, okay, suicide or somebody beat me. I saw him have a fight with some YouTuber and he's like, it's too much. I'm like, I want to step in and be like, Boogie, honestly, your social media presence is bad. I think it damages your brand. I think Boogie would do much better to be like a JonTron type mystery where we don't know everything about Boogie. He's just that fun guy who makes a video every now and again.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my thoughts on him.
And no, to be fair, that's actually probably most people, like, you know, like we all should do that. And that's really like, that is where I'm at the point where I'm like, I mean, I'm on Twitter right now. Like I've been going at it with Ethan and Andy, but it's funny and whatnot.
I quit Twitter for a day. I'm gonna try and quit it for a whole week.
I quit it for a month. Today.
Yeah. This has been the first time in months that I haven't tweeted. And you know what? It's it feels right.
See,
now the problem is, you know, all day. Twitter is a place where you have a dumb thought and you go, I gotta put this down. Like, I was driving around, I had some dumb thought where I'm like, my thought was grilling is overrated. I'm like, I don't understand why everybody likes to grill. You just cook a hamburger in your house. I don't think it really tastes, unless you got a charcoal grill.
Yeah.
But if you're cooking it with propane, and then I realized no one needs to know this. This isn't important to the world. I should only be tweeting if it's meaningful. I mean, at this point, I think I've gotten my Twitter to the point. I have 20,000 followers, which is a good number. If I put out a video, I can tweet about it. So I should probably just shut up. I'm fine with the 20,000. Which, but I'll go back on that, and I'm sure I'll be tweeting a week from now. But the social media is it's poison.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm going to push back on you a little bit because I think you antagonize sometimes.
I do, and I have to stop
because, like, I'll watch.
I don't know what you notice about me. I am an unbalanced individual. I admit to it. I'm like literally an insane person, and I tell people this. I go, listen, something's wrong in my head. I get crazy, and I go on Twitter and I'm like, God, I just want to fight. Because you know what it is. Today, everything is so screwed up, and we're trapped in our houses. There's no interaction with real human beings, and we're mad. We're mad at the situation. I got to go to Target, put on a mask. You know, I'm fogging up my glasses. Everything's sold out because everybody's hoarding everything. And I go home, and I'm like, you know what? Someone on Twitter is going to be the brunt of my rage today. And it's unhealthy. And I know it's unhealthy. And I'm becoming, and the worst thing is, I know when people meet me in real life, and even now as we're having this conversation, I think I come across as a nice guy.
Yeah, you are a nice guy. Yeah.
I think I'm a very reasonable guy as well. You know, I understand that people make mistakes. I go, Matt made a mistake. I'm not going to write him off as a human being. He's creating. And I love that. I love creators. Anybody who makes content, puts in the time. I love it. I respect it deeply. And on Twitter, I come off like a psychopath. Part of it is we have no way to communicate tone. I can't express that a lot of what I post is sarcasm, you know, or tongue in cheek. It's not when I'm like, fuck, you know, everybody or whatever. I'm trying to communicate a joke, but it comes off as, wow, Vito's an angry psychopath. And the only option we have to try and communicate mood is these emojis. It doesn't work. It doesn't. I don't think it works.
I think the
emojis. Yeah, I think they come off as even more insulting that you're adding little cartoons to your angry rants. It's bizarre. And I think that's become the problem of social media is everybody assumes everybody else is so angry when probably a lot of these things you see. Are just being communicated with the wrong tone, or you're assuming like the classic thing where somebody uses a caps lock and you go, oh, well, they're yelling this statement. No, it's just letters capitalized. Maybe they're just trying to empathize, you know, make their point as loud and bold as they can. I think we need to figure out a different way to communicate on the internet.
I honestly think Twitter it's trying to convey something that is quippy or poignant in 280 characters. And then it's also wading into an ocean of piss, you know, and then peeing in it, essentially, because you're just adding more to it. I think one of the things I see you do that I actually like, and I think you sometimes do it as a bit of an antagonizing thing is
right.
Like you'll talk about like because you get some tweets that go pretty viral.
And yeah. I'm good at this platform for some reason.
Yeah, you really are. Like you're fucking surprisingly good at that shit. So I watch you. So I'll watch you post a new fucking thing, right? Like you'll find some weird story or you'll find some shit and you'll post it. And then I'll watch your feed to see like if it blows up. And like I find it to be super like because sometimes they do and then other times they don't. And then sometimes you'll delete the ones that don't, and then you'll try another one to like. Right.
Sometimes you'll be like, you know what? This is a good story. I think I worded it wrong.
Yeah, or I understand that. Yeah.
Robot is mad. Honestly, like if there's a spelling mistake or like a weird grammar error, I'm like, do it again, do it again. I'm always rushing these tweets out, and I'm gonna go, I spelled that wrong, but it already has 20 likes, and I'll delete the one with 20 likes just because I'm like, if this goes big, I don't want to be the guy who can't spell.
Oh no, I'm in the same boat, dude. I do fucking speech to text for like most of my tweets,
right.
And then like if I'm out doing deliveries and I'm just trying to like respond to something, sometimes it fucks things up, and I don't check it before I post it. Cause I'm literally like operating my car. I'm like, it's fine. And then I'll look, and I'm like, God fucking damn it. It's this one's got like 4 retweets already. Fuck. You know, like, and then I just leave it because I'm like, oh, fuck it.
I'm like, people are going to think I'm unintelligent if I can't spell everything correctly.
It's I think it will. People fuck up on that shit all the time on Twitter. What I find to be funny is like today I made a joke that did pretty well. And I was just like, it was a one-off comment that I made about Laura Loomer. I think it was what I said here. I said, like, Laura has got, like, oh, fuck, where the hell is this down here? I said, Laura Loomer has already has had more successful political career than Sargon, and that's sad. And, you know, like, a bunch of people who hate Sargon were retweeting it. I'm like, I'm friends with Sargon. I'm still going to laugh at that, though. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, but you know, and then people are like, oh man, like Jarbo's fucking spitting fire. I'm like, no, that's a shit post. It's just a shit post. Like me going after like Andy for like doing a flight simulator over my house and crashing into my house. You know, like that's the stupidest thing on the goddamn planet.
An interesting beast, to be sure.
Oh yeah.
As somebody explained my tweeting style. They go, listen, Vito is the scattershot tweeter. Where he tweets 100 things that suck, and then the 101st thing will go super viral. You know, like I got Tropic Thunder to be the top trending topic on Twitter.
Yeah. Did you gain a lot of followers off of that?
I did. I think that's what pushed me over 20,000. And you know, news articles were being written about people because the post was that young people have never seen Tropic Thunder and now they're losing their minds to learn that Iron Man did blackface, which is a very interesting thing to see. And what was I going to say? It's an interesting thing to just, because here's the thing. I had tweeted that about in October or something similar. And I said, you know what? That was a great point. It was a funny tweet. I want to do it again. I'm going to try rewording it in a way that, because I was like, I'm like, this is funny. This is a great joke. I put it out there and I'm like, the wording worked. There you go. I'll give you Twitter tips sometime if you ever want them. I have my own little.
Yeah. Send me what you got. Cause like, I like to, I need to figure out.
Never make a tweet that doesn't have a picture with it.
Yeah.
If you don't
learn that about Facebook,
it won't do anything.
Yeah. I've learned that about Facebook too, because, I've been looking into like groups on Facebook because it's such an interesting way to build a collective audience.
Yeah.
Where if you're on Facebook and you have a group and it's active, these are like really engaged people. I'm in a murder, a true crime group that's like 150,000 people in it. And I joined with like a month ago when it had 125,000 people. This thing's blowing the fuck up, but it's literally like 99% women, if not more than that. And I'm one of the only active guys in there. So it's just wild to watch like these, how it operates and like figure that out. Cause women, men, they love true crime for one, and they also buy shit. So it's,
what is women's obsession with crime? It's very interesting.
So I actually asked
commit a crime.
No, it's not. It's safe danger. It's safe danger. So it's So it's predominantly like, this is going to sound so fucked up, but I was actually asking this woman I know about it, and she was honest. She goes like, women like sexual assault cases because it's safe danger. They can learn about someone being brutally raped and not have it happen to them. And it allows them to kind of like cathartically exist within that without being without actually having it happen to them. And I'm like, that's really fucked up, but I get it. I totally get it. You know, it's kind of like it's a weird, you know, I think South Park made the best joke when they called it informative murder porn. And so, like, my girlfriend and I, at the time when that South Park episode came out, we were, like, pretty hooked on, like, IDTV, watching a lot of that shit. And
and you were like, this is a little too close to home?
No. It was just because I grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries. I grew up, like, you know, reading these crime websites, crime books, watching crime shows. I like it. I think it's interesting. I like the
mysteries with that guy in the trench coat.
Yeah. Did you see the new stuff, though? It's not as good.
Oh, yeah, I assume it's bad.
Well, it's kind of like
show, man. That guy, I don't remember his name.
Robert Stack.
The narrator. Yeah, he made that show.
Oh, yeah. And that's the problem with this new stuff is the new one uses the theme song, which is awesome because it's still iconic. Like, and every time Netflix is all like, do you want to skip the intro? I'm like, you can go fuck yourself. No, I'm not skipping this intro. But the thing is, like, without having a narrator and without having it be like multiple small cases over the span of an hour, and this time it's like one case, it kind of, the stories are interesting and they've actually captivated a lot of the true crime community, but you're missing something.
Why even call it Unsolved Mysteries if you're not going to follow the format? That's bizarre. They don't have a narrator.
They don't. There's no narrator because they felt that it would be
1985. A small town in Missouri, full of hope. A young woman is missing, found with defensive wounds on her arms and legs. God, I just picture that guy. I love that guy. Robert Stack.
Robert Stack was great. I still think one of his best performances ever was Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. God, I love that movie.
That was the very first script I ever read. The night before the movie came out in 96, I was walking home and I stopped off at a Target just to get something to drink. And I'm looking through like the movie section as I usually do. And for some reason, I don't know why, they had the script book for Beavis and Butthead Do America on sale for like $15.
So
I bought it and I went home and I'm like, I should not read this because I need to go. Anyway. Oh, I did. And I was laughing so hard. I was crying while I was reading the script. It was the very first script I read. And I went and saw the movie the very next day. And I love the movie. And I went back, I think, two or three more times before it left theaters and I saw it. And I love still over 20, almost 25 years later. I love that fucking movie.
I really wish they would release more scripts. They're very interesting to go through.
Well, you can find them. They'll release them occasionally.
A lot of them are missing.
Yeah. Well,
we're never going to see the David Ayer script for Suicide Squad. Let's
I think we are going to see the Ayer cut of Suicide Squad, though.
I was going to bring that up early. I really hope so.
I think we are. Because he's been active, like very active. And it's like dropping because he's doing the same thing Zack Snyder did to get fan awareness for the Snyder Cut. Because that was the thing with the Snyder Cut. Kind of now we're like looping it back around to that shit from like 2 hours ago. right. You know, that's how conversations work. But the thing is like Snyder, you know, was always fanning the flames on this shit. He was always kind of dropping little screenshots of pieces of information or things like that. And he would do that to keep people interested. And then Ayer, like people, because, you know, Suicide Squad is like a mixed bag to many people. You either like it or you don't. I actually saw it twice in theaters and I liked it, but I didn't like the extended cut on home video. I thought it was kind of, nothing it added made sense to me. There was no benefit, but I liked the theatrical cut. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm happy with this movie. Whereas BVS, I was extremely disappointed with. Theatrical. And so then, you know, you're hearing about like this complications between the studio and David Ayer, and they brought in that trailer company to cut the movie.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. Trailer House is Trailer Park is their literal name. Good name for a company.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it works out really well. But they did that cut, and then they ended up, you know, that's what they put out there because they used all the poppy music, but you can't really you know, the soundtrack for Suicide Squad was like in the top 40. I think it went platinum, like it sold, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was even nominated for a Grammy, and Suicide Squad won an Oscar for fucking best costume.
Suicide Squad has the stupidest soundtrack. It's every memorable, like songs copied from every other popular movie. Like, do we need to hear Spirited in the Sky again?
Well, yeah, but
Sky.
Yeah, but I don't think, was that actually on the soundtrack itself? I don't know if it was. But
it was
in the movie. It was in the movie, but like, I mean, like the soundtrack, like the disc, it, you know, the album did very well. because I think also like that 21 Heathens track, or 21, what was it? 21 Pilots Heathens. That was like the one from the trailer did well. And then there's got like a little Wang song that did really well. And so like, but people were buying it. And I really think that it was Harley Quinn that was a big sell factor. A lot of young girls went back multiple times. So, you know, so the movie, it was financially successful, critically not so much. And then, you know, there was David Ayer and Warner Brothers, I think, butted heads enough, and he left to go do Bright for Netflix. And I think they kind of moved off in another direction after that. But the old guard at Warner's fucked up so badly following the release of Batman v Superman. Like, they fucked everything up because they were so desperate to copy Marvel. And so Ayer's got this cut. Like, we've seen some photos that have come out. He's talked about, like, alternate scenes, more Joker, stuff that makes more sense, things along those lines. And so fans have been asking for the Ayer cut. And the thing is, Ayer is on Twitter answering questions, dropping hints. And then people are tweeting AT&T about it. And AT&T is responding on their social media with, like, GIFs and memes and shit. So it's like, so either they're in on it, like they want to hype up HBO Max and they want to, which makes the most amount of sense. Yeah. But it's still, I mean, it's like they went and they brought Snyder back to do this Justice League. So my personal belief on it is that the future of the DCEU is kind of hinders on whether or not the Snyder cut is a success.
And yeah, they might push forward with the whole thing.
They might, because we're hearing rumors now, and this is what I fucking hate. Like, covering the movie stuff, like, I love talking movies. I could do it all day long, but I'm so done with talking about movie news, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, everything now is either, like, it's all, like, topped. I can't talk about, like, a small independent film on the channel, because no one is going to give a fuck. That's just the truth of it.
I mean, I have the same problem talking about Star Wars. It's what I'm known for, and people want to hear about it.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? It's the nature of the beast. And hopefully that's why I look at once you got people behind you and you have a successful Patreon, you can talk about small topics because you're not depending on YouTube for the
That's where I'm at right now, is trying to build up the Patreon and everything else to get to a point.
Matt, we've been talking for 2 hours.
Yeah, we have. I actually probably have to get to bed. I have to.
Boy, but I'm going to tell you this. We should talk more about the DC Cinematic Universe. I know we have polar opinions on it, but I am cautiously excited for the Snyder cut.
I think, again, DC fandom this Saturday, trailer information. What are you doing Saturday evening or Saturday late afternoon?
Why do I feel like I'm doing something on Saturday? Because I never do it.
Yeah, you're kind of humble. I'll hit you up. I think it's
hit
like
me two, up. I think I'm doing it.
Okay, so I know it's like at 2:30 p.m. PST is when the Snyder Cut panel is, and it's only like 25 minutes. So
maybe record a quick reaction fighting about it.
Or right,
that sounds like smart. That's good content.
Yeah, or we could do a StreamYard reaction over on Three Buck Theater. So just we watch it live, talk about it, and then we can debate it. Because I know I have a lot of Snyder Cut fanboys over on that subscribe to me over there that fucking hate you. So it's it's not something I want to get involved in personally, but it's like, I actually got DMs from people during that whole t-shirt thing. And they're, cause I was tweeting you or whatever. And they're just like, why are you friends with Vito? And I'm like, cause I like Vito, you know? And they're like, but like, he's a piece of shit. I'm all like, I don't see that. Like, you guys are disagreeing over,
man. If you give me an opportunity to troll a bunch of people who are easily trolled, let's say that about the Snyder Cut community, I can't resist. There's something inside me. It's a sickness, man.
Well, we'll have to do it.
They're so easily misled. I can't let it go. We'll talk about it next time.
All right, man. Yeah, you get to bed. I'm going to do the same thing here. I'll talk to the chat for a minute.
We'll talk, and I hope everything goes well for you in the channel. It seems like things are picking up, and I wish you all the best.
Thanks a lot, Vito. This was a lot of fun. This 2 hours went by real fucking quick.
God bless, my friend. We'll talk. Have fun.
Thank you very much, brother. Have yourself a good night. All right. Vito Gasulli, everybody. Check him out on Twitter. Check him out on YouTube. He puts out some really funny content. If you want to see a grown man fake vape Belle Delphine's bathwater and troll a shitload of people. It's funny. But I'm going to tell you the best thing Vito has done. During a protest up in, I think it was like Berkeley. This is right after the Kendall Jenner Pepsi video, a commercial came out. And he went up there with a fucking 12-pack of Pepsi and got in between like right-wing and Antifa people fighting. It was like, just have a Pepsi. Just have a Pepsi. It will be fine. And cracked me the fuck up, dude. He cracked me the fuck up. He's a good dude. You know, good guy. Anyway, oh, that was a fun conversation, right? That was pretty good. We did pretty well on that one. Surprisingly hit about almost like 1,000 individual playbacks for the last 2 hours, which is great. Yeah, we got Safety Zoom dropping the Discord link. Come on in there. Lexi here says, God, no, I called Matt once and he ended up talking to my boyfriend about games and movies for 45 minutes while I held the phone. Listen, I don't make any apologies for that, Lexi. You know what happens when you call me and we start talking about movies and video games. This is your own fault. I put this on you. And you know how much I love you, girl, anyway. All right, so let's see. Alex says, taking the temperature of the room here, is anyone really missing the MCU? After the movie stopped coming at a regular interval, I find myself completely forgetting about them at all. No, I'm still down for the MCU 100%, I think. But I see your point there. I'm waiting to see more. But I think for me personally, I'm more fascinated about the Disney Plus shows rather than what's coming from the studio itself, with the exception of Spider-Man 3, because that's the one I really, 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 really want to see. Let's see. Temera says here, legit best mods ever. No joke. Yeah, I got a good mod team. People I've known for a long time. Fantastic group of people. And, you know, you guys watching tonight, too. Fantastic group. You guys sat there for 2 hours. We just chit-chatted. We just BS'd. And we'll do the open calls on the next show. It all depends on when I have to work, but I have to find out everything about the job. I think they're going to text me in the morning and like tell me if I'm working tomorrow or not. I really hope so, because I want to start this fucking job. It's working for the United States Census. So I want to like get out there and I want to like, you know, I want to serve my country by trying to find out how many people live in a domicile. It just sounds like fun. Sounds interesting, however stupid that might be. So, Lexi says, ah, thanks. My wrench is due to nepotism. Technically, your wrench is due to cronyism, but I'll allow it. Let's see. John Hodgson says here, the murder porn I like is 1,000 Ways to Die. Pure dark humor with stupidity. Yeah, that's a funny one, too. Let's see. Ryan here asks, am I in Tim Pool on bad terms? Probably. I don't look, man. Like, I like Tim. I like Tim when we're like hanging out, and we've hung out a number of times. I think the problem with Tim is that he now believes the shit that he says, which is in many cases not true and very dumb takes. And a lot of that happens when you put out as much content as he does in as much rapid succession as he does. He doesn't really think about it. He's not thinking about what he's saying. What he's talking about is reacting. So he reacts to what he reads. And because he doesn't take the time to like read the article first and get the highlights of the article and get the points he needs to then make his own counterpoints or whatever, it ends up being this like stream of consciousness where just dumb things come out of his mouth. And it's like, you know, then there's the joke everyone makes about like how much he wants a civil war. And because he sells prepper shit. So, of course, he wants a fucking civil war. It's just, you know, the grift, man, the grift. And we all do it. You know, we all fucking do it. But it's it sucks. That's the thing with YouTube, to be honest with you guys. Like, as much as I love YouTube and talking to everybody, it's like it's such a shell of what it used to be. And I don't ever see it going back. I think you're going to start seeing a lot of people kind of fuck off because it's just like it's the grind just gets to you after a while. Like, I am way grayer in my hair. I looked at myself from a year ago, like how much gray hair I had a year ago versus now. And I'm looking like I'm 38 and I've kind of looked like I'm coming into my fucking late 40s. You know, I've got this like actual like snow white Santa Claus level beard patch underneath my chin. And it drives me up the wall because it just looks like it's not even a beard. It just looks like it's open skin. It's fucking wild. Let's see here. Tim Pool believes we're going to have a civil war too, and proudly claims it time after time. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, the quartering. Yeah, the quartering is a massive hypocrite. 100%. Yeah. He makes good money. Bought his wife a plane, apparently, but he's a massive fucking hypocrite. So, all right, guys. On that note, I am going to go pass the fuck out. I wanted to talk about the situation with Ralph tonight. You know what? Fuck it. Let me ask you guys a quick question. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this one. Do you think that Mr. Vickers is going to actually buy Ralph's house? I don't. But I think he's going to make the threat. And I think he's going to, like, put that fear in Ralph's head to fuck with him is what I think is going to happen. And I think it's going to be really goddamn fucking funny when it happens. You know, like, I mean, imagine pissing somebody off so much that they threaten to buy your house and evict you from it. I mean, that is like some late fucking 1800s, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge shit. And this is something that is like happening in 2020. I mean, like, this is just fucking wild. Let's see. All right. Let's see. Tim Pool is compelling. Short Fat Otaku is compelling. The quartering is the lowest common denominator. Yeah, sure. I mean, I like Short Fat Otaku. I like Dev. I've always liked Dev. I give him a little bit of shit, but I do like his content. He's got a very distinct style of speaking. And he definitely like scripts it. I'm more of like an off the cuff kind of guy. So that ends up kind of working to my detriment sometimes, but I do like him. The quartering just comes across as a guy who's looking for what's going to make you angry. So then he profits. And he's like that too. He's like that in person. He doesn't have convictions. He's just Jeremy. Let's see. Pranks and vengeance of the rich. Let's see. Alexa here says, I don't think he will, but it's bloody funny. It is pretty bloody funny. It is very bloody funny how Jesus. I'm just laughing my ass off. I'm just laughing. I read that earlier and I'm like, there's no way that's real. Like, there's literally no way that that's a real thing. And it turns out that it's absolutely something we might be having later on this year. This year could give us something hysterical. We'll have to wait and see, though. But let's see. All right. Yeah, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to go lay down my nice bed and get some sleep. Alvy here says, real quick, I heard the Mando trailer for season 2 drops tomorrow, potentially. Yeah, I'm hearing tomorrow night during an NBA game. Seems on par with Disney. I kind of hope it happens. I'd love to see some more Mando. Give me some more Baby Yoda. I'd be very happy. We'll do that. And then, yeah, so I'll be on probably tomorrow night, maybe, and we'll do a call-in stream again. And I know one person in particular who wanted to get on because they were actually texting my cell phone tonight. That was, yeah, stop that. Anyway, all right, guys. Well, thank you again very much for coming on by. Have yourself a great day. Check out the Discord. Safety dropped the link, and you guys can come on in and check that out there. I mean, It's building up again, surprisingly. We got a lot of new people that have joined in, probably good, bad, or the other. But it will be a good time had by all. Maybe not. And I'll talk to everyone later. Have yourself a great night. Thank you for watching Boulder Talk Radio. My name is Matt Jarboe. Have yourself a great night, and